Okay, good morning. This is Jimmy Summerlin, Chapter 7 trustee. Today is December 13, 2022. This is the continued 341 meeting for Power Home Solar LLC, bankruptcy case number 22-50228 in the United States Bankruptcy Court for the Western District of North Carolina. Are representatives from the debtors ready? Are ready to begin? Okay. All right.
You can mute that.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you are on the WebEx feed, if you would please mute your microphones and turn your video feeds off until we are ready to start. All right. I'm not going to go through the full opening statement that I read last time. I'm just going to make a few opening remarks, and then we'll move on to the questioning. I'm going to begin today's session with asking questions myself. Last time we started with the people online, but today I will begin asking my questions, and then my counsel, Mr. Thompson, will have a few questions. And then after that's completed, we will move around the courtroom and then online. We will be ending this session no later than 1 o'clock p.m. today. That will be the outside time limit because we have other court obligations. And so anyone who does not get to ask a question, I do apologize, but we cannot just let this creditors meeting go on forever and ever and ever. If you are on the line and listening, if you are preparing to file a claim, if you have questions about filing a claim, the claims notice will actually be coming out within the next week, I'm sure. We will request the court to do that so you can actually have a deadline to file your claim. When you are doing that, you may wish to seek counsel of your own choosing. There is no need to email my office to ask me how to file a claim because I cannot give you any legal advice or to tell you what to include in your claim. If you are a homeowner with warranty issues or issues that your solar panels are not working, again, like I said last time, the trustee and the bankruptcy estate are not performing any warranty work. We're not doing any new installations. We are in full liquidation mode. If you need work on your system, you should contact a third party to do that work, and we will, and you can include that information in your claim should you file one. As I said last time, I'm very sympathetic to all of the homeowners who have issues with their solar systems. Unfortunately, there's nothing that I can personally do or the bankruptcy estate can do to assist you with those. Power Home Solar is closed. It is not operating. It is not in business any longer. So you need to look to third parties to assist you with your solar systems. If you have a loan and you're paying on those loans, again, we can't give you legal advice as to what to do about that. You should contact your lender or your own attorney. I would probably recommend your own attorney. If you're a landlord, again, we're working. The court approved the sale of various assets yesterday, and our goal is to be getting those assets out of your facilities as soon as possible in order to get those sold and return those facilities to you. When you're filing claims, it does not matter if you're the first or the last. All claims are treated the same. In accordance with the bankruptcy code, there are set priorities within the bankruptcy code, but it does not matter if you're the first person to file a claim or the last person. As long as you file your claim in a timely manner, it will be treated the same as other creditors within your same class. Okay, when it comes time to ask questions, we're going to limit the questions to probably about 2 questions per person so we can get as many people as we can through the process. There is no need to ask specific questions about your solar system or your loan or anything like that. If you start asking those questions or giving a big, long explanation, I will cut you off and go to the next person today. We cannot ask or answer questions about individual solar systems, individual loans, or anything like that. The questions need to be general in nature, and as I said, we will cut you off today. I didn't do that last time, but we will cut you off today to allow other people to ask the more general questions. And as I said last time, if you become belligerent or vulgar, you may be removed from the courtroom if you're in the courtroom. Hopefully that doesn't happen. Or from the video call if you're on the video call. We will not tolerate incivility. Okay? Ms. Gorman, who is here on behalf of Power Home Solar?
Mr. Summerlin, we've got Kevin Klink, Brian Wolf, Steve Murphy, and Jason Waller, all prior to the case being filed with principals of Power Home and Solar.
Okay, thank you. Gentlemen, if you would please raise your right hand, I'll administer your oath, and then we'll get on with the question. All right, and I'm going to do this all at one time, but if you just follow me. Do you swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give is the whole truth and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I did.
Thank you. All right. I want to start my questions with a related entity. That is ISI Properties, LLC, who I believe was the landlord for the main office in Mooresville. Is that correct, Mr. Waller?
Yes.
Who are the owners of ISI Properties, LLC?
Kevin Klink and myself.
Okay. And when did it acquire the property in Mooresville that was the corporate office?
2012.
Okay. And do you recall how much it paid for that office at the time?
I don't recall.
Since 2012, did the company or Power Home Solar do a lot of upgrades to the building?
Yes, it did.
Okay. What kind of upgrades did it do?
Paint, carpet, added cubicles. I think we upgraded some ACs.
Yes.
I believe we did that. A little bit of construction on walls, and also redid the pavement outside for parking.
Okay. And who paid for those repairs and upgrades?
Well, there were multiple companies that lived in there since we bought the building, so all the companies that were there as the tenants paid for those. So one was ISI Alarms was the first company there. Second one was Power Home Technologies, and the third one was Power Home Solar. So during that time, they paid for any upgrades or changes to the facility.
Are all those companies that you named, they're all related entities owned by you and Mr. Klink or you and someone?
ISI Alarms was. We closed that. Power Home Technologies, Kevin Klink and myself were owners in that. They were established before then. We came in. ISI Alarms joined that company, and then we sold that company in 2015 to 14, the end of 14, first day of 15, and opened up Power Home Solar out of that building.
Okay. And I believe at some point in 2022, you decided to sell the corporate office. Is that correct?
It is correct.
And why did you decide to sell the corporate office at that time?
We were advised by counsel and different potential investors. We had an LOI with a public company that said it would benefit us to not have ownership in a building personally, and that we needed to be more at market share for rent because we weren't. And so we needed to make sure that we had the ability, if we were going to go public, that we wouldn't own the building there, too. What is the word I'm thinking of, Kevin?
Conflict of interest.
Conflict of interest.
Okay. And how much was the rent prior to the time you sold it before? I know there was a rent increase.
Yeah, it was $24,900, and we brought it up to $30,000. It's a 28,000 square foot building, almost 29.
Might pull your mic down a little bit, too. Maybe a little louder.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay.
And you sold that building to Spirit Realty?
Yes.
Is Spirit Realty in any way affiliated with Power Home Solar or anybody sitting at the witness table?
No.
No.
How did you find Spirit Realty as a buyer?
We had a realtor.
Who was that realtor?
Eric Wasserman.
Is Mr. Wasserman in any way related to Power Home Solar or anyone sitting at the witness table?
No.
No.
Or Spirit Realty?
No.
Who was the company that was working with you on the possibility of going public?
There was a couple. MGG was trying to do a SPAC with us that we had an LOI on that we changed, and then XL Fleet had an LOI for us in April 2022 for $1.05 billion to go public. But then we had several offers of other companies, private companies, too. We were in transaction mode for about 2 years, going through audited financials and finding a way to take the company public.
Our investment bank advisor was Piper Sandler.
There you go.
And did you have counsel doing that process?
Yeah, we had Darrow Everett was our attorneys at the time through that process.
As part of the sale of the property to Spirit Realty, I believe there was a substantial sum of about $370,000 placed in escrow. Remember that?
Yeah, that's correct.
What was that placed in escrow for?
To do additional upgrades to the building.
Were the upgrades done to the building?
They were started, but I don't think we completed them, no.
Okay. Were there any upgrades done to the building that were not reimbursed out of that fund to Power Home Solar?
I'm not sure.
Did any of the funds that went into the escrow belong to Power Home Solar?
No.
Did they come out of the purchase price that you were receiving?
From ISI, yeah. They came out of our side.
Okay. Does ISI Properties LLC own any other real estate?
Yes.
And what real estate is that?
A residential single-family home in Mooresville.
Is that, I know there's two ISI properties. One, there's ISI Properties and ISI Properties 2. Which company owns the residential real estate?
The one I'm speaking of is ISI, you know, original or one.
Okay. And where is that real estate located?
Mooresville, North Carolina.
Was that also leased by Power Home Solar?
No.
Does ISI Properties LLC own any other assets?
No.
What about ISI Properties 2?
Yes.
LLC? And what real estate does it own?
It owns a single-family home in Davidson, North Carolina.
And is that the property that Power Home Solar was paying rent for?
For a short time, yes.
And what was Power Home Solar renting that property for?
For employee living.
And which employee was that?
That was me, part of my employment agreement. When I moved to Michigan in 2018, we redid my employment agreement with our team, a board, and Trivest signed off on it that I needed a place because I sold my house and moved to Michigan to come to corporate. So it was running that home. So when I came, this was, you know, prior to COVID, but came during COVID to help work at the office. That was the rental spot where I would come with me and my family to come work out of the corporate office because I moved to Michigan to open up that market.
Okay. When did you move to Michigan?
August 2018.
And when did you move back to North Carolina?
August 2021.
Okay. When you moved back to North Carolina, did you move back to this residence that the company was leasing for you, or did you have a different residence?
No, I moved in there temporarily until I found a home I could buy, and then moved into Davidson.
Okay.
So we lived there for maybe a month.
I believe during the 12-month period prior to the petition date, there was also some rent paid to ISI Properties, too, for that property?
Prior to the past year, is what you're saying?
Or no,
before
during,
that? Or during?
During the past year.
Yeah, that was maybe 2 months is what I recall. I think I did send that over, the amount.
Right. And who was that? Who was living in the property at that
time? That was finishing out the lease. And that was kind of a little bit of a gap with Jason.
Yeah.
Mr. Waller.
Sure, the way it worked is I would live in Michigan until 2021. So if I came back, rather than stay in a hotel, bring my family up in here for multiple weeks at a time, the company was renting that home at cost, and I was staying there for those several weeks until I moved here permanently August 2021.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Well, I understand that. My question is there was some rent paid after August 21.
Oh, but it must have been for the lease. Yeah, it must have been for the couple months for the lease. I'm not aware of that.
Okay. Has that lease terminated?
Yes.
Obviously, with the bankruptcy it has, but was anybody living there other than Mr. Waller?
No.
Does ISI Properties, too, own any other real estate?
No.
Did Power Home Solar fund any portion of the purchase price for the property at 919 North Main Street in Mooresville?
No.
Both ISI Properties and ISI Properties, too, Mr. Waller, owned by you and Mr. Kunk?
Yes.
Anyone else involved in that?
No.
Thank you. Moving to the operations of Power Home Solar, who was responsible for the hiring of employees in the sales and financing departments?
Ben Burkhart was our chief sales officer. So he was over any hiring and sales. Finance department would go through Steve Murphy and through Juan Ramirez, who was our previous CFO.
And who was responsible for training those employees that were hired in those two areas?
On financing, I'd have to let Steve talk on that. For sales, I believe we had multiple trainers. I don't know. I think we had a training program of five or six different people. Michelle, I don't remember her last name. John LeBlanc was one of them for a while. Who else managed the training? It was Deb. Paul G.
Yeah.
So they had training where they would do online training for several weeks and then go out and ride with district managers as well. So, but that was handled by we had a training department, and the person over training was Michelle. What was her last name?
Grafe. G-R-A-E-F.
She was the senior director of development and training?
Was her last.
She reported to Steve as well.
Yeah,
who trained on the finance side? Yeah, who trained on the finance side?
Juan Ramirez, the CFO, and James Carroll, the controller.
And who was responsible for supervising the people who were actually conducting the training?
Well,
Well, as far as Juan Ramirez was responsible for supervising James Carroll, and I was responsible for supervising Juan Ramirez.
Okay. And on the sales side?
It would be Michelle was responsible for the trainers that worked for her, and then she reported to Steve because she trained all departments. It wasn't just sales, but sales was involved in that as well.
Okay.
And they, and on the sales side, it reported to Ben Brookhart, who was our previous chief sales officer.
And also on the sales side, all the training modules would also have to be approved by compliance, a third party, you know, outside counsel, before training on it.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me how your financing programs with different lenders work. Did you use the same lender the entire time? Did you start with one lender and then go to a different lender at some point, or did you use all of them?
We would just mix it up. It really depended on who had the best points, you know, our origination fees, as you could think about it. So we couldn't just push it all to one, so we would have to break it up. Maybe certain districts or geography would end up offering a certain loan program, and that's just the finance company. The program itself, the terms were exactly the same across the board, but we would just mix it up between two to three at any given time.
Okay, and who were your primary financing companies?
Goodleap, Sunlight, and Mosaic were the three big ones.
And how did you go about selecting Goodleap, Sunlight, and Mosaic?
They approached us, being really in the industry, it's pretty small. So you don't have, you know, all these banks you can just go and call up for this kind of financing. It's a really a specialty loan.
Are any of Goodleap, Sunlight, Mosaic, or any of the other lenders in any way related to Power Home Solar?
No.
Or any of the people sitting at the witness table?
No.
No.
Does anybody at the witness table have an ownership interest in any of the finance companies?
No.
Directly or indirectly?
No.
Are the financing programs for Goodleap and Sunlight and Mosaic basically, they work all basically the same?
They do. That's how we would select them, is we wouldn't work with a finance company that had, you know, something different than what the offering was, because then, you know, by market it would have to change. And we had one universal price, one universal you know, loan program that we would offer to people.
Okay. And tell me how that financing program works.
Zero down. So customer can, you know, have solar installed without having to come out of pocket for anything. It's a monthly payment.
And were there credit checks that were run on the customers or anything like that?
Yes. They had to own the home, and they had to have a satisfactory credit score.
And what was a satisfactory credit score?
You know, we never really got to look, you know, behind the curtain, but the way we understood it was a 640. They had, you know, a chance of being approved. There were programs that went down to sometimes as low as a 600, but 640 was kind of a number that we felt comfortable, you know, advertising as far as sending somebody out there to run an appointment. So they had to have at least a 640.
And who made the decision on whether that credit score was satisfactory?
The customer, with whatever they told us.
I think he's asking for the loan to.
Oh, yeah, no, we don't. We don't get to determine.
It'll be the
finance
companies
did their own credit checks.
Yeah.
Were there ever customers turned down because their credit score wasn't high enough?
Yes.
And what percentage, if you know, of customers were turned down because of their credit?
I don't.
You know how often customers were turned down because of their credit?
No.
So the customer contacts you, they fill out their paperwork. The financing company runs the credit score. I assume there's loan documents, obviously, for the loan. It's zero down, you said?
Yes, if approved.
Okay. And they finance it for how many months?
It's anywhere between a 20 and 25-year payment.
And what was the interest rate?
Anywhere between 2.99 and 5.99.
How did you evaluate Good Leap, Sunlight, and Mosaic before you entered into business with them?
We did some simple due diligence on the back end, with the help of counsel, and went over all documents that they sent over to us, and then, with that, we would move forward if it checked out.
And was that counsel Darrell? Excuse me. Was that counsel Darrell Everett?
Yes.
So the maximum interest rate that any homeowner would have gotten was 5.99%?
That's what I recall. Yeah, there might have been another program along the way, but that's where almost all the customers ended up.
Who is Jason Cassidy?
He's Senior Director of Operations.
Yes.
And what was his job?
Oversee installation and some services, customer services.
And how long was he with the company, if you recall?
To the best of my recollection, about 4 years.
Was he with the company when it was closed?
No.
And when did he leave the company?
Spring of 2022.
And why did he leave the company?
His performance was determined not to be adequate for what we needed.
Tell me what you mean by that.
We feel that he had enough control over the size of the company and the number of teams out there that we wanted for our quality assurance requirements. And so we opted to put that division back under Mr. Bill Waller.
I'll also jump in. He was asked when they changed the comp plan for the installers to make sure he proactively worked with the labor board in North Carolina, and he blatantly didn't, and therefore an investigation opened up, and he was terminated shortly after. I said, he blatantly didn't pay attention and do this, and this could be costly. We changed their comp plan to where they got more per hour. We actually raised it, but their install costs went down. And anytime you do that, you have to pay attention to the hours. So I think there was a investigation that opened up, and I believe we ended up settling for it. It wasn't large, but it was just the neglect that was frustrating because he was told by our HR team and counsel, hey, make sure if you're changing that comp plan for the installers to do that, we're trying to hire. You had all these service tickets coming in April and May. I think we let them go sometime in late April. And we were trying to bring on as many qualified installers as we could because the calls went service tickets from like 800 to 15,000. We were struggling trying to figure all that out, and we needed qualified people to get out there as fast as possible. So we raised their pay. But anytime you do that, you got to make sure that you evaluate that, talk to compliance and the board, and he didn't do that.
Okay. Was he involved with the financing of the company?
I know what you're talking about. I saw some of that that assumption of an email that's out there online. Somebody sent me and asked about. I can't say exactly, but what that looks like is Jason Cassidy was part of our switch from solo, which was our software company we used for several years. So if we did a proposal for you, we used Solo, and then we would pull up the finance company, and you would work with the finance company to get finance. We switched to Aurora in 2020 or 21, during 20?
2020.
Middle of 20, end of 20. And when we switched to Aurora, Cassidy used to be over sales. He was in the sales side. He was also a director of sales. We moved him over to production in March 2021. But he had to do the migration of switching from Solo to Aurora. So what I believe I saw online, which says you have to click a battery, I can't 1,000% comment on this, but I believe what that is, and maybe you guys can reach out to him, is a workaround that doesn't affect the customer when they click on something and say, oh, it's this rate to get a battery. It was because Solo wouldn't pick the finance company, so they had to internal click the battery in order to show the Aurora proposal, because we were using the new software, in order to get them the loan. It didn't affect the consumers whatsoever. I saw that internal email that was posted, I think you're asking about.
Okay. Aurora was 2021.
Okay, Aurora was during 2021. Well, there's an email out there online that shows that you have to click this on a drop-down, and feel free to reach out to them. I believe that was an internal workaround, because Solo wasn't talking to Aurora, so they had to click a certain thing to get battery in order to get the special financing, because battery used to not be 25 years for us. Regular Solo used to be a 20-year loan, and battery was 25-year, but we moved everything to 25-year. But Solo wouldn't allow that, so they had to click battery. It didn't go under, it didn't change the customer's pricing. It didn't do any of that stuff. And then it allowed them to go in and say, oh, okay, now I get that 25-year 299 rate, whether I do battery or not, but it wouldn't let them do it through Solo, so there was a workaround. That's my belief on that email.
Okay. So the workaround wasn't designed to
increase price or change anything. It was designed internal in order to go ahead and get them the financing at 299 25-year, because Solo was stuck at like a 399 20-year. So you had to internally move around it, add battery, and change, is my understanding. I would reach out to John LeBlanc and Jason Cassidy to confirm that they did that whole migration, and I remember an internal email about that, and I saw that. Someone showed me that online and was like, look at this, and I said, that's ridiculous. That's not what – it was an internal workaround.
Okay. And it wasn't designed to get people qualified for credit that otherwise wouldn't
It didn't
qualify.
Change that. No, the finance company has to approve them and send them the loan docs. It has nothing to do with what we click or what we change.
Yeah, that's definitely not to your question.
Were your customers provided paper copies of the loan documents?
They were emailed to them. From what I understand, it was an emailed version.
Okay. Were they allowed to review the loan documents before they signed them?
Yeah, the email would go to them. So it would go to their personal email for them to review. Some customers went ahead and moved forward right then and there. Others needed time. They want to come back and, you know, set up a second appointment or fill it out later.
And we gave customers 7-day right of refuse, like to cancel, which most states only say 3. We gave 7. So they had more time to look or question anything before we move their project along.
What about your installation employees? Who's responsible for hiring those?
So for a long time, it was Jason Cassidy, and then after that, it was Mike Weber and Bill Waller.
And what kind of training did they go through?
Steve? They had training modules of in-classroom video training, going through Michelle Graves' training department. So that they were trained consistently. So there was an in-portion or in-classroom portion. Then there was an in-field portion where they worked with an existing installation crew and were shown physically what they did. And then each one of the installation warehouses had a mock-up system on the mock-up roof. And it's about 4 feet off the ground where they could actually touch, feel, install, do the wiring, do all of that sort of thing. So there was a practical and a book learning portion of it.
And who was responsible for supervising your field crews?
Each crew had its own crew leader, who was the senior person on there, and then each crew leader reported to a program manager, or project manager. And that was each office had a project manager that had a handful of crew leads that reported to them, and then it went up from there.
And then they had regionals, and then it went to the assistant director and director.
Yeah.
And that same format, you know, prior to 2022, we had about 15 or 18 service teams. We had about 80 install teams. In March, April, when this influx of service came in and failed systems, we ended up flipping. We had almost 80 service teams and like 20 install teams. So we had to build up these service teams. We took our installers, who are our most experienced, and started making them service techs to go out and fix this stuff. And we were shrinking our install teams at the time. The reason I bring this up is you have the same people that a crew leader for a crew that went to a project manager, you had the same thing in service. You had a service manager that reported to a service project manager that reported to regionals. So they had different hierarchy. They didn't commingle.
Okay. I think someone testified last time that you did not do business in Florida. Is that correct?
We do not do business. We have employees there from in a call center for SDAs, but we do not sell solar systems in Florida.
Okay. Because there's a lease in Florida. Ms. Abel asked me why I was asking this. It's because there's a lease of a piece of property in Florida that I was trying to figure out why we have a lease of a property
in Florida. I thought it was because of the class action lawsuit against Generac in Florida, but I wasn't sure.
Why did you not work in Florida
there? We weren't licensed, and by the time we got licensed, you know, we didn't open up. You know, when we opened up a market, we did a lot of testing on marketing, to qualification of finding installers, you know, things like that. Is the utility company friendly, or do they give a lot of, you know, pushback and finishing jobs? And Florida just, it was on the radar for later in 2022. It just never happened. But we had a call center there. We had, employees that moved there. So we opened a call center. Where was it at?
In Tampa.
Tampa. So they did a lot of our, when someone was online or they saw a TV ad or a commercial, they would fill out a form or call in. They then would qualify them, and they would go through like a, you know, 10 questions and then schedule the appointment for a consultant to come out. That's how that worked.
Okay. There's a lot of call center folks in Florida. So for us, it was great.
Like I said, the only reason I asked was because there was a lease of property in Florida.
Yeah.
And so I was kind of confused by that.
I knew why you're asking.
Switching gears over to the Generac lawsuit, that was filed August 1st of this year.
Yes, right.
And shortly after that, you signed over an amendment to your financing statement with J.P. Morgan, granting them a security interest in that lawsuit. Remember that?
It was acknowledging that they had a security interest in that lawsuit. They torqued their position was in the original credit documents that they had rights to any tort proceedings that could occur. That was a general statement,
right.
And then they asked our attorneys to have that amendment signed to clarify specifically that they were aware of and that they were, you know, we were acknowledging that that was in the original credit agreement.
And it felt like, because we had an internal argument about it, it felt like, I'm just going to be super transparent on this issue because it bothers me. It felt like they were strong-arming Steve to do it because they were financially supposed to help us. That's what it felt like, because Kevin and I were shocked that it even happened. We didn't know it was signed. A few days later, we're on the calls with counsel, and we're like, sign this doc. Like, why would you sign that doc? They need to help us get out of this hole, like work with us on this and bridge us. They don't get those rights. They're not just going to. So it was an internal issue when it happened, and even our counsel at the time felt that it was inappropriate the way they handled it and kind of cornered Steve and had him sign it.
Okay. Did the management or the board for Power Home Solar approve signing that?
Well, after he signed it, he's the president. I didn't know if there was anything else we could do. We didn't like it. We found out a few days later, and about that time we were talking to bankruptcy counsel a few weeks at that time, figuring that part out, not this.
Okay. Were you engaged with bankruptcy counsel at the time that agreement was signed.
When was the agreement signed?
August.
No, it was in September. We started talking to bankruptcy counsel.
Since August 1st of 2022, has J.P. Morgan provided any further financing to Power Home Solar?
No, in fact, they took some away.
Explain that.
Hey, go ahead.
We used a P card, charge card, to fund a lot of our vendor purchases to maintain operations, and we had a cap on our credit limit, and they reduced our, we were late on a payment by a day. We told them that was going to happen. They would get their payment the next day. We did. At that time, they reduced our credit limit by, I think, $1.2 or $1.8 million, essentially, you know, making it more difficult to operate at a time when we were already struggling to operate.
They reduced it by 1.8 or they reduced it to 1.8?
They reduced it by, I don't remember the exact number.
It was 1.8.
1.8. I think it went from 10 million to
8.2.
They collapsed the credit line.
Yes.
Did you submit borrowing-based certificates for credit access?
Can you repeat the question?
Did you ever have to submit a borrowing-based certificate, like a, was it an asset-based loan, so that you were, they were looking at your collateral position to decide whether you could get an advance on the line, or was it just a revolving credit? You just
It was revolving, but it had rights to assets. And so there was a quarterly reporting, compliance reporting that was done.
Okay. But compliance reporting was only quarterly.
Correct.
When was the last quarterly compliance report submitted to them?
Best of my recollection, it would have been by the end of January.
Yes.
I'm sorry, July?
Oh, okay.
July.
It would have been for Q2, 22?
For Q2, yeah.
To your knowledge, are there any personal guarantees on the financing to J.P. Morgan or from J.P. Morgan?
There were not.
Other than the Power Home Solar assets, or is there any other collateral for that loan?
No.
Turning back to we talked about the expenses the company reimbursed the three of you last time, and I appreciate you sending me documentation. Mr. Waller, Mr. Klink, I will discuss yours at a later date because I'm still reviewing those. But Mr. Murphy, I just have a few questions for you on the expenses. You live in Fort Lauderdale?
I do.
Did Pink Energy pay for weekly trips for you to travel to Mooresville?
It was about every other week, every third week.
And they paid for your airline ticket?
That's correct.
And they paid for your parking?
That's
at
correct.
The airport? That's did they correct. Provide you a car?
They did.
Here in North Carolina?
Yes.
In Florida too?
No.
What is Jeffrey's restaurant?
It is a place that I typically eat dinner on the way home to the hotel that I stayed at, because it's very close, like half a block.
Okay. And did the company reimburse you for those meals?
Yes, they did.
And what is online reputation management?
It was, I believe, it's an agreement that we worked out, I think, as a part of this too, an agreement with a company that would help out with reputation.
Okay. Was that for Power Home Solar or for Mr. Murphy?
I didn't recall the name. Yes, no.
It was for Power Home Solar.
That's correct. Yes, I used a a credit card to make that payment online because it was an online portal.
And I'm not trying to nitpick every charge that's on there, but I got a couple questions just out of curiosity. There was several charges for hotel rooms and suites, it looked like, for South Beach, Miami in late February 2022.
There was a executive planning session, and we used an executive coach to run that for us. And I paid the majority of those expenses because I was dealing directly with the coach, from the coach CEO Coaching International firm.
What was the name of the firm?
CEO Coaching International, I believe.
And who attended that seminars, those coaching sessions?
Jason Waller, myself, Kevin Klink, Mr. Burkhart, and
Juan Ramirez.
And Juan Ramirez.
And the company reimbursed for all those expenses, I'm assuming?
That's correct.
And on December 30th of 2021, there was a charge, almost $5,000 for a hotel for one night at Hilton Grand Islander, Orlando. You recall that?
Give me the date again.
December 30th, 21. In Orlando.
It would have been for some meeting. Not for me personally. I don't recall going to Orlando. It would have been covering some meeting cost. I don't want to give you an inaccurate answer, but I know I didn't stay in Orlando for $5,000.
All right, I think that's all the questions I have at the moment. I'm going to turn it over to my counsel, Mr. Thompson, who has some other questions for you, and then we'll see if Ms. Abel has any. We'll go from there.
Good morning. As Mr. Summerlin said, my name is Glenn Thompson, counsel for the trustee. I have a few questions of my own, and a few I want to try to clean up or follow up on Mr. Summerlin asked. I'll start with the last topic. You referenced CEO Coaching International. Can you give me a ballpark of how much in aggregate the company spent on that company over the life of your relationship with them?
That was the only time we used them as a team. Some of our, and I don't know whether or not.
I did. You and Ben did.
No, maybe I did not.
No, Kevin did and Ben did.
But as far as using as an executive team, we only used them the one time.
And then we had an ongoing monthly, he's speaking about that.
Yeah, let me take that back because we did have a tail off on there where we agreed to pay him, I think it was $5,000 a month for the next few months to train our second tier and third tier managers. And then we decided that we didn't need that any longer and weren't going to use it. So there was the executive session, which I think was $10,000. I'm going from memory now. And then there was a $5,000 a month training fee for our managers and directors for about 3 months, I want to say, after that.
Okay. And is there any connection between that entity and anyone in the management of
Power
Home? No.
Okay. A few minutes ago, I believe it was Mr. Waller referenced the 7-day to rescind arrangement on your contracts. Did customers often take advantage of that? Did anyone ever take advantage of that?
I don't know the exact percentage, but about probably 1 in 5. We had around a 20% cancellation rate.
Okay.
So, throw a dart at it, it's close to that. That's industry standard. But we extended. We used to be 3 days. We extended it, I don't know, almost 2 years ago. Or
when we I don't know exactly when it was.
Yeah, we went through some you know, compliance, like, hey, how can we, you know, better the experience and do things? And one of the things we wanted to add in for value was because in the industry, you know, you could see that people were not letting people out. And so we wanted to make sure that they had time to make a decision, think about it, ponder it, call us, and then we start the process. The reason we also morphed to do that is we would spend a lot of money on moving jobs along. In solar, there's about 14 different departments. It starts with the sale, then you got to go to design, then you got to go to permitting, then you got to go to interconnection, structural lettering, ordering the equipment, installations, inspection. I mean, there are customers. It's like an assembly line. We would have customers be way advanced, costing us money, and they're like, oh, well, I canceled that. I thought about that. So we put that 7-day in place to call, confirm, hey, we're good to go, and move it along for cost efficiency and to give them more time.
So you actually began making an affirmative reach out 7 days. You don't want to rescind? We're good to go?
We send them, well, no, they don't reach out, but we send them a design. So we have what we call a concierge that manages each customer through the process. So they're getting emails and text messages, hey, we've moved your job, so we would be proactive. It's now in design. Hey, it's now in permitting, to try to keep them along as we're moving the job along.
Okay. Mr. Murphy, you referenced a moment ago the car you were provided when you came to North Carolina. Was that a company-owned car or a rental car for you?
Leased car.
A company leased car?
Okay.
I'm going to back up pretty far and try to not repeat myself, but or repeat Mr. Summerlin, but there was reference early on to the lease agreement with ISI, and I think I understood the testimony about how you increased the rent. What I want to know is how did the actual amount it was increased to come to be determined?
You know, I think the way I remembered is we had some, you know, market research done and determined that that was under market, so we brought it up a tad, you know. And that was really how we got to that, which still, you know, for that big of a building is under market slightly, but it was enough to move forward and feel comfortable with it.
Was this at the urging of the investment banker to help ISI stabilize, to take it to market?
No, it had nothing to do with ISI. It was about Power Home.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. So the potential looking like we had an inside, you know, a deal that was basically give them a lower rent, and then, you know, of course, that's not fair to the market. So just getting it away from us and into, you know, a third party like every other building is that we lease was what we were advised to do.
Presumably the higher rent also assisted ISI in finding a buyer for the building.
I'm not sure.
Okay. Was there an actual negotiation between someone on behalf of ISI and someone on behalf of Power Home, or was it sort of a, just a...
No.
How did that come out?
No.
Okay. Were there any individuals, well, let me ask this question. Were the four individuals here today, those primarily involved in the decision to file bankruptcy?
I guess I'm confused. Ask the question again.
Who were the primary decision makers when you made the decision to file bankruptcy?
It was.
We did as a team.
Yeah, we did as a team. I would say it was Kevin, Steve, myself, and counsel. You know, Zach Dare was involved in that as well. And, you know, Brian was there as an officer, but not, he didn't have equity. And we decided that staring in the barrel of it, us personally, we're having to start to pay the payroll, and the company wasn't getting the money when the money froze from the finance companies. You know, things started to turn around. If you asked me the first week of September, are we going to be okay? I believe we were going to be okay. We got our BVB back. Sales were up. Things were starting to turn. Finance companies froze us. So that second week, we started to do the math going, we're not going to be able to make payroll. We can't have people work and not get paid. So we had to scrounge up and come up with a game plan. And talking to the attorneys at first, they were trying to get us to do a Chapter 11.
Yeah.
We couldn't afford Chapter 11. And so we're staring at the barrel of not being able to make payroll. Because Kevin and I only have so much, contrary to what the world thinks. We don't have as much as they're all portraying. We had to put it together to cover that payroll and made that decision to hurry up, and we're going to have to do something now. I mean, it was like it hit us like a wave. We weren't ready, and we made that decision within days.
Okay. You touched on two questions I was going to ask, so let me jump into those now. Did there come a time when anyone out-of-pocket funded payroll or other expenses at the last minute?
Yes. Kevin, myself, and Steve, I believe, I don't know the exact amount, but it was
close to $4 million.
close to $4 million total cover payroll and expenses at the last hour for the company.
That was a one-time, the last payroll, essentially?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so I presume none of that was ever repaid?
It's still a loan unpaid.
Okay. You started to talk a little bit about the things were turning a little bit, and I think you referenced BBB, which I assume is the Better Business Bureau.
Yeah.
A rating came up that was better?
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me the other factors when things were, I wanted to sort of ask you for a timeline of how things started to devolve. You said it came on you quickly. I want to understand the timeline of how quickly it came and what things were hopeful, looking like we might get out of this, and what things were sort of the death knell that took us down. I want to understand the timing of that.
Do you want me to start? I have a nice timeline here, Finn. Do you want me to start with the first Generac issue and then how things evolved, or do you want me to just go into recent times this year? Because I read fast and I've got the bullets.
Why don't you start with how far you took it back on your timeline there?
Okay, so obviously the company has been growing almost 100% year over year, adding jobs, winning every award. I think it was 40 business awards, EY Entrepreneur of the Year award, A-plus with the BBB, all these things. I felt like we were the darling in solar, north of 30,000 customers. Things are going great for several years, five NFL stadiums. April 2021, we get a call. A melted SnapRS was discovered during a service call for a customer in Cincinnati, Ohio, complaining about a lack of system production. It's key because that's what all these consumers, most of the problems these consumers are feeling is they were sold something that doesn't work. That's the number one issue with the firmware. It makes the system not perform. That's been proven. It's in, right? Like, we have that. But that's what happened. They were complaining about lack of system production. Our findings were immediately reported to Generac, which said this was the first time they heard of the issue. This is April 2021. In August 2021, another solar installer using Generac's products parts reached out to Pink Energy to inquire about whether we had noticed issues with Generac SnapRS, noticing a high rate with SnapRS failing and needing replacement. This was a company called Valley Solar that emailed us on that in August 2021, and the device is showing signs of heat deformation or even charring. The installer brought the issue to Generac, we did, and they didn't give us much of a response. Later,
can I interrupt you real quick? Can you give me, I'm sure I can't understand the technical, but the layman's version of what SnapRS is?
So a SnapRS, yeah. When you get solar panels, you get panels on the roof, and both behind each solar panel is called the SnapRS, which is like an ignition switch. It allows the energy on the panel to be turned on and then sent down the wire into the inverter. So every panel has this Generac SnapRS since we've been using them middle of 2020. So it's not that they're a battery customer, Generac. They have the SnapRS. What was happening is these things were getting hot. As we go through the timeline, these things were getting hot and creating fires. So Generac sent this firmware out, which anytime things would brown out, and they would shut part of the system down. Each system has an array, and an array is eight panels. So if Kevin has a 24-panel system, he has three arrays, 8, 8, 8. In each of those arrays, each eight, there are SnapRS 801s on each panel. So he has 24 of those, eight in each array. If one fails, they have to shut the entire array off with the firmware. So now Kevin is only at two-thirds his system production. If two fail on different arrays, now Kevin's at one-third his solar production, where a consumer can go, man, I bought something. This doesn't, why isn't this working? Well, I mean, it's worked for 7+ years. It doesn't work because they sent firmware to shut these systems down and didn't tell nobody. So that's the technical side of it.
Okay, thank you. Back to your time, Mom.
Okay, yeah, you're welcome. So in August, that installer sent us that email. Later in August, a fire occurred at a home of a Pink Energy customer in Kentucky. The cause of the fire was believed to be overheating of the SnapRS in the customer system. I remember that day because our legal counsel was like, oh, my gosh, what's going on with this part, and started hounding Generac. August 12, 2021, a couple days later, a conference call between Pink Energy and Generac was held to discuss potential thermal events associated with the SnapRS. Generac disclosed to Pink Energy for the first time that it was investigating bulging and separation issues and was developing a new model of the SnapRS called the 801A.
The date on that timeline?
August 12, 2021.
Thank you.
In August 18th, a fire takes place at Pink Energy's customer's home in South Carolina. The cause of the claim is believed to be a melting or exploding SnapRS. August 19th, the next day, Generac informs us that it had developed a firmware update which had the ability to remotely identify defective SNAP RF units that were in danger of overheating and which presented the potential for thermal events. Pink Energy was assured that the firmware update applied by Generac remedied the issue of the overactive SNAP RS turning on and off repeatedly and would keep each unit signal constant in the on position until there was a forced rapid shutdown. Generac says at that time the firmware updates began to be sent to the customers' homes on this date, with more occurring over the next couple of days. Jeff McAndrew, Generac's director of sales for its East region, said to Pink Energy in an email, "All good, so glad this resolved so quickly." So we had multiple calls with their executive team, and they said, "All is good, it is fixed." We believe them. We're continuing to install their stuff. September 29, 2021, Generac emails Pink Energy concerning firmware update and says it has not seen any post-firmware failure, so they're trying to give us good news. In situations where the SNAP RF at issue has not exhibited issues prior to the firmware update. Now, take in mind, we're not gaining a bunch of service calls because I guess what's happening is when these things are overheating, they're sending firmware out, shutting down the systems. We don't know the systems are shut down. The consumer doesn't know the system shut down. Nobody knows. They think they're just chugging along, supposed to be making power. The calls haven't escalated to us yet because they're getting a bill and it's a little off, and then they get another bill and it's way off. Mid-October 2021, following the fires at the homes of the customers in Kentucky and South Carolina, Pink Energy asked Generac for a report on corrective action being taken regarding the SNAP RS failures and the effectiveness of those actions. Generac provided no report. Fall 2021, Generac continued to reassure Pink Energy that its firmware update remedied the SNAP RS overheating issue. We have reason to believe Generac was fully aware that its firmware update would have adverse effects on the overall operation and energy production of Pink Energy's customer solar systems by shutting down the entire arrays of solar panels prolonged periods. We also have reason to believe Generac was aware that a significant number of Pink Energy's customers had not received the firmware update because their solar energy system was not connected to the Internet. That's when we brought up to them, what about those that don't have Internet? We're going to get that handled. We're going to send that somebody out to handle it. That was their take.
I'm sorry. Were they explaining to Pink Energy at the time that the solution was to shut it down?
No. They explained that the firmware remedied it from heating up and there were no more issues. All is good. That was their stance the entire time until I get a little bit later in the thing, and then they changed their stance. Late 2021, Pink Energy receives a dramatic spike in complaints. Customers claiming that their solar energy systems are not producing the energy promised. We're not seeing noticeable savings on their monthly utility bills, and they're experiencing complete shutdowns of their solar energy system, indicated by error messages on their Generac inverters. The inverter coded as the issue of PVRSS lockout system error. The lockout is caused when a PV link or the inverter detects a malfunctioning or overheating SNAP RS in a particular array of the panels. When that happens, the entire array goes into lockout mode, and the array does not generate any power until the lockout is cleared. Before PVRSS lockout issues began, Pink Energy had approximately 800 service calls a month. Currently, now this was printed in June 2022, so you know, currently calls into our customer service team are approximately over 30,000 calls per month. So here we are installing north of 30,000 customers, and we're getting 800 phone calls a month for all these customers that we have. We have all these great ratings, these great reviews, all these great things. This problem happens, and now we're getting 30,000 phone calls a month. And all these people, we're still scratching our heads going, what is going on here? Why aren't their systems working? What is this firmware doing? Late 2021, Generac starts supplying Pink Energy with second-generation SNAP RS called 801A. Representing that the new part had been redesigned to fix the product defect in the SNAP 801, despite repeated assurances from Generac, Pink Energy did not see any reduction in incidence of PVRSS lockouts after replacing the SNAP 801 and the 801As. Instead, Pink Energy continued to see the same thermal events in the 801As. So when we put them in, they would get a thermal event. That's when they would turn it off to stop it from getting a fire. We're having to replace these. We've replaced over 100,000 of these.
Mr. Waller, so these snaps are kind of like in a regular electrical system, they're kind of like a breaker? Is that a good characterization?
It's like an ignition switch in a car, right? So the power, it turns on and then sends the juice. And so when Generac states it's an insulation issue, these systems that we're talking about, they were installed, they were operating, they passed inspection, and then this happened. It's not an installation issue. There are some customers with normal installation issues. That's part of owning a big company, lots of customers. You have those issues. And those customers, unfortunately, it's not fair to them, are escalated because they didn't get taken care of because of the abundance of 15, 20,000 customers that have this issue. That's the kiss of death here is this situation.
Okay. And how many solar systems did you sell in 2021?
I don't have my phone on me. I got to say
maybe 9,000.
Yeah.
My estimate, best estimate would be around 9,000.
Yeah. Going into the new year, we had 30,000 customers, and half our customer base is Generac. So we've grown half the size. So prior to, middle of 2020, it was SolarEdge. We don't have these kind of issues. You have a customer who might have shading or have a customer has normal problems. That's, when you have 30,000 customers and you're getting 500 or 800 calls a month, you're a really good company. When you have 30,000 customers and you're getting 15,000 failures and 30,000 calls a month because these customers are calling repeatedly, there's a problem. And that's kind of that was this started to compile as we went into 2022. So in spring of 2022, Pink Energy asked Generac whether a report involving the SnapRS has been filed with the Consumer Product Safety Commission, CPSC, or other government agents, or whether the product recall had been initiated. Generac responds at the time it submitted a report to the CPSC, but did not believe a recall was necessary. In May, Pink Energy asked for a copy of that report. They refused to give it to us. Also in May, after much prodding by Pink Energy because of the backlash from customers. So it was May. I remember in March, this bad news article came out in Detroit where they had, I think it was 20-something complaints. And in those 20-something complaints, I believe it was 18 of them were SnapRS issues. Two were installation issues. And so that guy, Rob, set up, 8-10 different visits from sales reps and did this whole, oh, my gosh, thing, right? And painted us to be this bad company, painted me to be like the Wolf of Wall Street. And people take a photograph in an Hour magazine where I'm using a leased jacket and for a magazine for Best Dressed in Detroit, and they utilize that to paint the picture of who I am. And little do they know that, I care about this company. I fought till the end for all these customers. We always did the right thing. We didn't milk the company. You guys are seeing that we didn't take resources from the company. We wanted to take this company public. We wanted people to own their power, own their energy, and make a difference. So it was tough.
Let me ask this. You threw out some numbers about the rate of customer complaints, and you said something, I think, 2 out of 20. Did you have internal records, documents that will show the name that categorized the various complaints?
Yes.
Where are those now?
We've turned everything over to the trustee.
Yeah, they would be the emails. And Rachel Ritchie managed all of this process and what was going on, how to categorize it. Also in May, we forced Generac. We told them, you need to send these consumers a letter. We're taking the heat of this. These customers are blaming us for everything. I had intimate phone calls with the CEO, Aaron Jagdfeld. He said we should have, and he was on a call with us, they should have done more due diligence with the Pika acquisition. They did generators great. They bought Pika out of Vietnam, and they told us this product was great, and it wasn't. They've known about it since April 2021. They hid from it with the firmware. They assured us the firmware was fine. In June, the CEO sends us an email and says, great news. We have the new part. The firmware was always a temporary fix. We have the new part, the 802. That's when we lost it. We got on the phone with them. We started to threaten to sue them. Things are going to have to get better. Give us those 802s. What's going on? We started to build our case against them. And when they weren't paying us for services throughout this time, they were having a 41% fail rate. We have 20,000 customers for Generac systems. Each system's about, call it 20 panels. So that's what, 400,000 snaps? Is that right, Brian?
Okay,
call it 400,000 snaps. They told us it was a 41% fail rate. If I owned a car manufacturer and I had a seatbelt or an airbag that had 1% fail rate, they would make me do a national recall. They're at 41% fail rate at the time when we found all this out in June, July, and we're like, oh my gosh, this is a Generac firmware issue, and we have to get in front of this and let the customers know what's going on, make them send a letter. They told us we had to replace all of them. So my argument, heated argument to them was, so we have to replace 100% of these. Well, right now only 41% are failing, but we have to replace 100%. Well, yes, over time. I said, so you're at 100% fail rate. You need to tell every one of your customers what you're doing, and they didn't. They just did it. And that's why there's two class action lawsuits from consumers against Generac right now. And there's one in Florida. It's not even our customers. There are six companies suing Generac, like us. We were the biggest share, probably 70-80%, I'm assuming, of all of their solar was us. So if Steve owned a small solar company and he installed 300, he's not feeling the pain of us installing 20,000. They used us as their guinea pigs, our customers as their guinea pigs, like it was wrong how they handled this. And now there's a securities class action lawsuit because they didn't tell their investors about the SNAP issue. So this clearly, I'm not trying to put blame. We're responsible for our stuff, and I feel horrible for every customer, for every creditor, for everybody, every employee. I feel horrible. I fought so I couldn't fight no more. But this is like my family's taking a heat. Like people are giving us death threats. People don't understand that we fought the fight as much as we can and that the media has painted us to be these bad people, and we're not. And it's been hard because we're sitting here trying to get the real information out there. And the real problem is most of these systems, a vast majority of our problems, came from failing systems where they shut them down and they're not producing. This ain't a sales issue. We have an M100.
Let me jump in. I'm sorry. I appreciate all that background. Let me get back because I know we've got limited time. I'm going to give a chance. I want to understand the rise and fall for...
I was talking about it going up. I'm sorry.
I want to understand where PHS's feelings were about the company as you moved towards the bankruptcy.
Yeah, so June they got that letter. June we talked to them. They changed it. And then what we did in July is we went back and forth with them for them to start paying. We had a $51 million invoice to them. We finally gathered data engineers to see how many truck rolls we were doing, how many snaps we were doing, how many millions of dollars we were giving in customer rebates because her system was down for 4 months because of this. She shouldn't have to pay that. Here's this. Generac assured us they would take care of that. They didn't, right? So this was building up, and because of all of us, we had to lay people off. Things were getting tight. We laid our first layoffs in May, and then we had our next layoff. We had layoffs in May. And we had layoffs in June, and then we did the final layoff in September, and we laid people off in May. We were like, okay, we're heavy. We're going to shut down markets that are struggling. We have a lot of cancellations because we laid off people, because of all these complaints on this Generac issue. Let's see if we can gather the wagons. The BBB took away our rating. We had meetings with them, showed them the lawsuit, and they started to see other companies having the same issue with Generac we were. So then they gave us, in June or July, they gave us our rating back of an A+, and our sales started to pick up. Consumers believed in us again. We were out there showing them that, look, we're going to be installing SolarEdge. We started that in August, not Generac. We're here for the long haul. We're here to do the right thing. So all these customers believed in us and picked us. We started to see the numbers go up.
Let me elaborate on that. So our June was better than our May. Our July was better than June. August better than July. September
would have been
first week. Wow,
$14 million in sales the first week. Things were turning.
When you're looking at when you're evaluating a good month, a better month, is it purely based on the front end? Like when you close a sale and you get the big payment at the front end, you're not talking about.
No, we look at it. We look at it. What goes in the pipeline? So if we sold what we call bookings, if we had bookings of $50 million in February. Well, there's going to be some cancels, things that don't shake out, but most of that should install in the next 60 days, right? So that's really going to help the revenue of April. So when we went from, I don't know the exact dates, but when we went from like $50 million in February, or maybe it was March, and then dropped to like $18 million because of all these complaints and calls, people on hold for 5 hours, that was a problem. Then it went to like $22 million, then it went to $26 million, then it went to like $35 million, and it was on its way up. But because of our costs, you know, you're feeding this machine, you've got 2,200 employees, you're in several states, you got leases, you have to start scaling down. Here we are scrambling, scaling, because we have the front end coming, but we can't put them in for 60 to 90 days. That revenue's not coming in. And then the cancels come up, and then consumers get scared because we're doing layoffs, and we're doing layoffs in order to be efficient to get this done. And we didn't have Generac, who we thought was going to stand up and give us that $50 or $80 million in service fees and things like that and step up and take the responsibility they were supposed to take and help bridge us through this. That didn't happen either. And so what happened was as the finance companies got nervous as we were laying people off, the complaints were up. Even though we were selling more, they dried up the money coming in. So we weren't getting money on the front end or the back end. So when we saw, you were asking, wow, every month it's getting better. You know, we did the pink energy change. The assumption out there is we're hiding from something. The truth is we sent a letter to every customer, and we went on TV for a whole week letting customers know we changed. We changed because we were going public. We changed because we talked to the XL fleet, and we said, look, we don't want to be power, home, solar. It's small. Let's be pink energy. Let's be part of something great. We did a huge deal with Susan G. Komen. Like, we were excited. Fast forward, when we were closing, we start to get the momentum back, and we're seeing all these sales start to grow. We were sitting here talking like, I'm so glad we pulled away from Generac. We got the lawsuit against them. We're using SolarEdge. We're getting SolarEdge equipment. We're excited. But the finance companies got scared, and they quit paying us, and they started doing the clawbacks, and then we couldn't make the payroll, and that's what pushed us into this. Had we had that bridge, I truly believe we could have pulled out of this, but we didn't.
That bridge being the payment from Generac you were hoping for?
The payment from Generac and the finance companies not being so strict. They were holding everything back, not funding us on accounts. If they would have been a little bit more lenient, we would have made this work. We were in depth conversations with them in September. Even though sales were up, we couldn't do it. And then when the cash wasn't there, we had to lay more people off. We went from $14 million to $4 million to $1 million in sales for 3 weeks.
You're referring to the finance companies, the three you identified earlier that were the finance companies for your customers. I thought at first you were talking about financing for the business. Did you ever reach out to any other lenders to help?
We talked to J.P. Morgan all the time and thought they were going to come up with something, but really they A, didn't understand the business. They were too worried about thinking we had millions and tens of millions of dollars of equipment out there, and we ran a tight ship. We didn't. We were efficient, and they weren't really helpful. They took money away.
Yeah, we also put together a bridge loan package.
We did.
To see whether or not we could get bridge funding to help us through this cash crunch. Reached out to, you know, distressed lenders and spoke to them, explained the situation to them, put a package together about what we were doing, where we were doing it, 100% transparent, talked to several, but we didn't get a bite, and with J.P. Morgan not coming to the table either, help bridge until we could get money out of Generac.
What's the timing of that bridge loan effort you're talking about?
What's that?
What's the timing of that?
We started that
July, August.
Yeah, late August.
I think late July.
I would say probably late July.
Yeah, and we were telling them, sales.
We're putting the package together end of July, into early August. And then we worked that process through August.
And what we were showing them and what we were seeing is our sales was going up. The cash wasn't coming in because you have to install it. And so we were selling what we were selling 2 months ago, which was less, because we were gaining momentum. So we were showing them, like, look, the sales, the pipeline is big. We just got to get through this because the finance companies are tightening up, and we can't catch up with the installs. You can't get a permit approved, inspection. You can't get all that faster than the 60 to 90 days. So you're at that mercy. So whatever we sell today isn't going to install for 60 days. But we just needed that bridge.
So the bridge loan package, you attempted it. It was unsuccessful. There was discussion with JPM. At what point did you go from a hopeful they're going to help to we know they're not going to help now?
Within days of closing.
Okay. In the week or week two?
Yeah, closed September 21st, and it was the weekend. That was Wednesday. It was the weekend. I went to my daughter's parent event in Bama. She's going to Bama. And I remember being in the airport telling them, like, we didn't get funded. Goodleaf didn't fund us. We were sitting here having this conversation. It was a Sunday. Who else didn't fund us? Sunlight didn't fund us. We got zero funding again. I said, we're not going to make payroll. We're going to have to close the doors. So we made one last-ditch effort Monday and Tuesday and all day Wednesday to try to get J.P. Morgan to step up, to try to get these finance companies to not charge us back or claw back things for a little bit, because we just had two great weeks in sales. But they didn't. And so Wednesday, we let everybody go abruptly. And then a few weeks later, that's when we were talking to Bankruptcy Council. A few weeks later,
that was Wednesday, September 21st.
Were the discussions with JPM promising reason to believe they were going to provide the whatever sort of arrangements you needed, bridge or other leniency?
We had two sets of conversations going on. Our attorneys were talking with their attorneys,
mm-hmm.
and I was talking with their distress credit lead, Bill Canny, last name was. And, we were talking one-on-one through this process, and on that Monday or Tuesday, whichever that day that was, when I had, asked him, we really need to get this bridge funding, get some bridge funding to get us through this. And he said, he went back, said he was going to go back and talk with their internal folks. He came back and said, it's not going to do anything further. And I didn't use the bankruptcy word. I said, you do realize what you're saying to me, don't you? He says, I understand. You really understand what you're saying here.
Steve did the talking to the banks. Kevin and I, really didn't. I mean, I focused on being the face and
sure.
rallying up the executives, but he managed the bank relationship.
So then let me ask you this. I want to know if, from the outsider looking in, would I see any indication that there was reason to hope that JPM was going to come through? Was there letters of intent or anything in writing or any kind of term sheet or anything that would suggest to you that they were working toward possibly?
There had been a term sheet. We had been working on an expanded credit facility and a waiver of a couple of covenant defaults cooperatively with their local team. And there was a term sheet there. There was not a term sheet for the bridge financing when
was that term sheet with JPM, the expanded operation? When was that? When did that come to fruition?
I think the last discussions around with that term sheet were probably late July, something like that.
Okay. Thank you for that. I'm going to change lines a little bit here, and I'll try to speed up. My next question is there a specific thing that the company deems to be the root of its financial difficulty? I assume the answer to that is the Generac failures. Is there anything besides that that you would say was a major contributor?
I think it's the cancellation rates, the media. The media really hurt us. Our brand took a beating with misinformation out there where we couldn't recover.
Okay. You gave the picture of the sales slowing down and ramping back up, and you mentioned that at some point you switched from Generac. Were those two things coinciding? Did you start selling more once you terminated working with Generac?
Yeah, great question. So when the BBB took away, when you're in a home, people want to, you want to have credibility when you're in the home. And the reason why these almost 40,000 customers chose us is because we were credible. We've done a great job for several years. It's a reason why they all picked us and waited 7 days and wanted to get installed. When we lost the BBB rating and the media was just hitting us from all kinds of directions, from, a handful of very upset customers or ex-employees, and they're all rallying around each other with hate, I understand the frustration for customers and I feel horrible for them, but the misinformation or the confusion for them getting media involved and doing things and media not really digging deeper, just throwing it out there, that hurt the brand so bad that when we got the BBB back, we felt confident again. When we were going into homes, we can look at a customer and say, look, we're going through some issues. We're a big company. Generac's a big company. We actually had a lawsuit against them. We're going to do what's right for our consumers, and we're here to give you a better product, blah, 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 blah. So, yes, I would say that was part of it. And then numbers started to pick up. Cash ran out.
If I could add to that, when the BBB restored the rating to an A+, they specifically cited the reason for restoring their rating was because we shifted away from using Generac equipment.
Yes. Thank you, Brian.
You referenced in your bullet point timeline you were giving me another company. I wrote it down, but I can't find it now.
Valley Solar. They sent us an email, and now there's four or five companies suing Generac.
That's my question. Did you have you're aware of those suits? Did you have interaction with your other competitors about these issues? Was there anything?
No. So when we closed, there were a lot of our employees that were going to go to a competitor locally, 365 Solar. Matt, owner's Matt Steiner, he was an employee of ours a long time ago. And Matt was buying into the media and posted something inappropriate and very rude the day we closed. So I gave him a call and I said, dude, you know, first of all, you don't build your business on bashing other companies. It's inappropriate. Secondly, I've got really good employees, loyal employees that worked hard, fought this fight, that want to come work for you. And he's using Generac. And I said, I know you have Generac problems. I know you've talked to different lawyers about maybe suing them. He was nervous because if he left, he didn't want to expose more customers getting mad at him. He saw what we went through. We were vocal about it, and it ended up killing us, right? So I said, look, you've got to do what's right for your business. But these people want to work for you. You're going to have to stand up eventually for your brand and for your consumers. I believe he's one of them suing them, but that was the only company I've talked to, and that was after we closed, right before we bankrupt. And I told him he was getting some good people on his team.
Okay.
But I haven't collaborated with any of them. We just saw that email, and I've seen online the different lawsuits and different, you know, lawyers citing that they're, you know, the Generac issue and these other, the Florida one, we don't have customers in Florida. That's where that one stemmed from. So there's obviously installers there suing Generac as well.
There is a term of art in bankruptcy world. It's called incurring debts beyond your ability to pay them when they come due. That may not mean a lot to you, but if I use that phrase for you, did there become a time, a moment in time, when you or the leadership said, you're now incurring debts beyond our ability to pay them when they come due? And if so, when was that time?
That'd be September. I mean, that's the time when we decided, we saw that we won't be able to continue going and paying our bills and making a payroll.
Yeah, it came very fast because we've always, you know, you're running a business like that and you're growing. You know, there are times, there are months that cash is better than others, and there are months that are profitable. And we kind of try to look at things on a quarterly basis, right? Not to have a knee-jerk reaction and freak out. And this kind of crept up on us fast. Had we been funding and not the clawbacks the way they were and things worked, we would have been able to do that. We weren't. So the circle shrank really quick.
Are there, I'll save that question. did COVID-19 have any impact on your business?
At first, so when COVID hit, we elected as executives to go off payroll for several months because we didn't know what would happen. We asked our vendors to take a pause because we didn't know what would happen. We were having hourly calls with, you know, attorneys and health departments to see if we were a company that was essential. We ended up staying open. We ended up putting, you know, masks and sanitizer and tests at different locations and gloves for those that wanted to stay open. We wanted to make sure that they had an opportunity to work and provide. But we grew during COVID. You know, that was right when the partnership happened with Generac, and Generac wanted to sponsor some TV ads with us. And so we doubled down on the TV ads, and people were home, lots of eyeballs, and we went from 800 employees prior to COVID to finishing the year near double, 1,500 employees. So we actually grew under COVID.
Okay. Are there any other, we've talked about Generac, we mentioned COVID there, are there any other what I would call things beyond your control? And I would imagine in your business the weather is a big impact, or natural disasters. Anything else in the last, say, year prior to closure that was a significant impact on your business operations that would have been outside your control?
Wasn't there a storm? And
there was, typically we have 1 month historically. It's usually January or February where the weather really knocks out our ability to do the installations. There's too much ice, storms, whatever else. This past year, it was really January and February. December was rather mild, December of 21, but January and February had a combination of ice storms, you know, snowstorms, that sort of thing. And it was also right at the time where the Omicron bubble hit, so we had some crews out and that sort of thing. So that was difficult. We, you know, typically weather that, you know, pun intended, we get through that. We know we're going to have a month, but it was just a little more so this year because of the combination of Omicron and more weather in January, February. But then we started picking right back up. Yeah, you know, end of February, end of March, until these service calls and the system started failing.
So the financial impact of that, though, if it's an install delay issue, the financial impact of that would have been felt something on the lines of May, June timeframe, 60 days later, the installs you weren't doing in February?
So, so the installs, so what we sell today installs in 60 days. So we had a great revenue would be installed, bookings would be sales. We had a great December revenue month. January and February weren't so great revenue because we couldn't get the installs, and we count it when the installs are there. March and April were better revenue, but the bookings were bad, which affected the cash flow in May and June.
Okay. All right. Tell me about the structure of your employees. You mentioned the teams a few moments ago, project manager, crew leader, field crew. Are there certain, and I understand you've got office in Mooresville. I think there's also some other facilities I've seen referenced in Troy, Michigan, Chesterfield, Michigan, Raleigh, North Carolina. I want to know who works for you and where they are.
So all the executives report to me. None of the directors do. The directors report to the executives. So, you know, we would get on an executive call every day, go over, and if we're in the same office, but if Steve's out of town or when I live in Michigan, and go over what's going on. We'd also get on a director's call once a week with all the directors. We had 30-plus directors. The format was, you know, Kevin was over marketing. Steve was over financing. He had one report to him, and basically as a president, everybody kind of funneled through him. Brian came in new into the finance side. We wanted to add some more firepower into there, especially as we're going to do a public transaction. Ben Brookhart at the time was over sales, and that's it. You were over installation, Steve was. So they would report to me. We talked daily. We would do the meetings. Under them, there you would have senior directors. You had a senior director of sales. You had a senior director of installations. Under them would be an assistant director. You would have a director of customer service. So you had all these branches. You had a director of QAs. You had a director of design. You had a director of permitting. You had a director of all of those, and they all reported up to the executives who reported up to me.
Are they all based in Mooresville, or are they spread out?
No, they're spread out. So, you know, in Charlotte, we had an office in Charlotte, too, over off Harris Boulevard. We had all of our customer care center there, and our QA team and SDAs.
Scheduling.
You know, there's a department, like, there's so many layers to this. It's so complex. But we had a scheduling department. We had a customer service department. We had a QA department. We had a permitting department, a design department, an interconnection, which you got to hook to the utility department, structural letter engineer, HOA department, service, advanced service issue department, installation department. All of these departments had directors. Call center-wise, you had your bulk of office staff in Charlotte, Mooresville, and Troy. You had your bulk of sales folks spread out amongst the states we were in, and that mirrored the same hierarchy or what you were asking, you know, reporting to as installations did. So in sales, you had field energy consultants that went into the home. They reported to a sales manager. Sales manager reported to a regional. A regional reported to an assistant director. Assistant director reported to a director. Director reported to an executive. The executives reported to me.
Is a sales team or a field crew, do they go to an office? Do they work sort of out of the truck?
They do. Nope. So each one of ours has W-2 employees. We didn't have subs. And we had offices. I think it was a total of maybe 55 locations. But half of those are sales. Half of those are installed. There are some combos where they're in the same. If we found a great facility that they could coexist.
How big would those be in terms of numbers of employees?
Smaller office?
50 to 75, I would think, at each location. You know, depending on what cities. Like, Detroit had a lot more because it was our largest install market, so it had a lot of installers there and a lot more sales over out of Troy. Where Roanoke, Virginia has 5 sales folks, but 2 install teams. And Nashville, Tennessee has 10 salespeople and 5 install teams. Like, so it varies each location depending on the saturation of customer base.
How about number of employees at the Charlotte, Mooresville, and Troy locations you mentioned?
I would say there were a couple hundred in Charlotte, there were a couple hundred in Mooresville, and a couple hundred in Troy. So I'd probably say 600 or 700. Between those, I'm guessing, by the way, it's close to that.
All right, thank you. Did the cash management structure in the last year of operations change in any way? Did you change how you were paying vendors,
You mentioned a credit card at one point for vendors that was shut down. Did you change how you were paying people by check, by wire, by ACH? Were there changes in that operation?
It's the same process. I mean, we used the P-card or credit card rule for every trade receivable that would allow, you know, would allow that kind of payment. And we did a lot of ACH for those that didn't allow credit card. But very few for vendor payments, very few paper checks for some time now. It's either ACH or P-card, credit
and,
card.
And did that change at any point when you got in the credit crunch with the bank?
When we asked some of our vendors to allow us, you know, different kinds of payment structures to allow us to get through that, you know, window we were, Jason was talking about where cash was and revenue was tighter in June and July. So we were working with the vendors to, you know, on payment plans and paying that process.
Okay. So things did change in that June-July time frame as you worked on cash crunch.
If you're online with your microphone on, please turn it off. We can hear you talking, please.
I don't know
where
it is.
There were certain insurance policies in the name of renewable clean energies intended to benefit its subsidiaries, including Power Home Solar. Are there other entities covered by those policies?
I don't know. Only those entities that required us to have them as named insured that were
like a landlord or
that sort of thing, okay. Not related entities.
Were there any other subsidiaries besides Power Home Solar under renewable clean energies?
No.
Okay. There was some testimony, I think, before and today about customer refunds for certain units. How did you track those refunds and how were those payments determined and paid?
They were mailed out. Finance side, you know, if a customer, if it was approved by customer service and went to the finance side, they would mail out a check and refund them. And then we would be saving that information based on what the issue was, and a very, very high percentage, 90% plus, was a Generac issue where we were tallying that on the Generac invoice for them to reimburse us, that we reimburse those customers.
What led you to believe that Generac might actually make those payments? You said at some point you thought
they
would.
We had conversations with them. Go ahead, Kevin.
Multiple conversations with them where, you know, this is your issue. This is your part. We're already taking a beating for this. If we have to reimburse a customer for payments, we expect you to pay it. And while they danced, the impression that Steve and I were on a lot of those calls, it was very clear, okay, they're good for it.
We own this. We're going to make this right. Don't you worry. We will fix this. We own this. The CEO himself said that to us multiple times. Michael Rather, yeah, I know. We're going to make this right. This is on us. Don't worry. And I'm like, and he's like, we can't pay for these. The first time he balked at paying the refunds, I said, unless you guys want to go fix every one of these and take full ownership, you need to start doing this now. We're taking the hits here. You need to reimburse each customer. Okay, we'll make it right. And that's why we were submitting them on our invoices to them.
When you are refunding or rebating customers, what are you rebating them for? Is it for the monthly payments when the system isn't working?
Yeah, so if your system is supposed to produce $200 worth of power, and because two-thirds of it's down, it's only producing $70 worth of power, and that's been happening for 4 months. We want to get you fixed, so we go up and replace you with the new parts that they come out with, and there was a time we were replacing with the parts thinking they were fixed, and they weren't fixed because the firmware, they would just reactivate the firmware, and we had to go back. We went to some customers 28 times, but we would go and we would fix it, and then we would submit a form. It would go to customer service, get approved, it would go to financing, and we'd mail the check for the months you were out times that. And we would save that invoice as part of what we were billing Generac on.
If we were looking for that information in your records now, is it obviously you kept an invoice for Generac, but is it also kept individually on the part
of the
service?
Yes, you would see it on the CRM for each customer, correct. There's very detailed notes in there.
Okay.
Is that next week?
That would be Salesforce. Yes.
NetSuite should, I would assume, I've never even logged in NetSuite, but I would assume NetSuite pulls the checks and the transactions.
Yeah,
but
this is financial.
You can tie that to ABC customer and pull it up in CRM and read the notes and the dialogue of what's happened.
Did any of your trade payable creditors, did they apply any pressure to you in the last few months? Did you get increased volume of phone calls? Where's my money? Where's my money from suppliers, et cetera?
Not more increase other than, you know, what we were having on an ongoing basis. Kokoda and I were talking with them regularly and working through, you know, while we were working through the cash crunch. And, you know, we'll set up this payment plan and work through the payment. We were making those payment plans.
Would you characterize it as you were being very proactive and reaching out to them as opposed to waiting for them to come to you?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, agreed.
Are you guys familiar, anyone on the panel familiar with the WARN Act and the obligations of an employer under the WARN Act?
We're familiar with it.
Okay. Did you have any professionals you consulted about WARN Act exposure at any point during this process, this sort of final process?
Yeah, we did, and we were trying to not let everyone go, but we didn't have the money. It was, you got to bash against the wall, because it turns like, well, we're going to have this issue, you know, the last couple of days. We were very strategic when we did layoffs, you know, in bulks. We did 800, I think, in May, and then 800 in June, and then we ended up closing in September. When we did that,
with Generac. And Generac had issues.
Ma'am, you might want to mute.
Yeah.
And then we'll drop them from the room.
We can't. Too long. We can't.
Okay.
So what I was saying, I'm trying to remember the question.
So we would check, we would consult with the team, both HR and our attorneys, and we'd have a roster submitted to them to make sure we don't have any conflict with the WARN Act. But there in the end days, being late September, we had no choice.
Yeah.
You know, we did everything we could.
But we were following it to a T with HR and compliance and our legal team on any of the layoffs until the day we closed.
Your belief is that the layoffs that were done in May and June were in compliance with WARN Act, but on September, obviously, you didn't have that luxury.
Yes. Okay. Council told us that, and our HR team, correct.
Okay. And that council was?
Sarah Everett.
Sarah Everett. And it was Andrew
Adams.
Okay. Was the attorney on that.
All right. Thank you.
That's all.
Just a couple follow-up questions. How many did you lay off in September?
I've got it. I don't want to speak incorrectly, so I'm going to have it here. $600 people in June. 800 in May, 800 in, I'm sorry, 600. Doesn't have, I think we laid off 800 in September, correct?
It was everyone.
No, but how many we did in June?
He's asking about September.
September. Oh, that was 800 in September, sorry.
800 in May, 600 June, 800 in September?
Yes, about right.
Okay. And the bridge loan packages that you submitted to various lenders, who were those submitted to?
I know we sent some to MGG. We sent it to Trivest, who was our minority partner, to try to help find someone. I sent it to some people in Michigan. I don't remember the names exactly, the emails, but I've talked to them at some Tiger events, some entrepreneur events, and knew that they were in that sentence and stuff.
And I reached out through a chain and spoke to a couple of our just network contacts if they knew of distressed funds, family funds, you know, family trust funds, that kind of thing, and reached out to several. I don't have those names, you know, but I reached out to several of them, told them the story, sent them the package, you know, explained to them what we were trying to do and why we were trying to do it. But.
And did you submit a formal bridge package to J.P. Morgan? Is there like a package that you submitted to them for consideration?
Yes, I believe so. I believe so. There was a lot of documentation going back and forth. We were also sending weekly updates on sales to their team before, you know, to the distressed office.
When did the actual credit crunch start?
I think we initially started feeling some pain in May when we did the first layoffs and, you know, things were tight. And then we started to see it pick up and then it was tight again. And we felt, well, it's the branding. But now that we got our BBB back and sales are up, because every month is getting better, we just had to wait to get it installed. And then we felt really good in August. You know, installs were up, sales were up, but the finance companies weren't paying us. They too many clawbacks, jobs taking too long, cancellations were going high because of the media and the layoffs and the Generac issue. And but sales were still doing well. And the way we do is we pay for marketing. We do digital marketing. So you're advertising on Facebook or Instagram or Pinterest. And, you know, so when you're investing and doing that, and the consumers are like, yeah, I want solar, and then they talk to you, and then we come out, we meet with them, we sign them up, you see that, hey, they're in the funnel, and, you know, in 60 days it's going to be there. And that funnel was growing, but the cash lay ran out. So I would say probably August, it got tight towards the end of August and beginning of September.
And remember, along that period of time, we were, you know, continuously working with Generac, and they were clearly...
We thought we were getting ready for $50 million.
...dragging us along.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, and we believed that they would do the right thing.
Yeah, the day we filed the lawsuit, I had a conversation with the CEO. It was filmed by Devin. I called him and I said, look, you guys have been dancing around this. You were supposed to pay us $31 million last week on the invoices. You paid us $4 million. I need you to make this right by today or we're filing a lawsuit. He said, well, just file your lawsuit. David versus Goliath. They didn't care. So we have no choice. They'd file a lawsuit. If we'd have got that $31 million, I don't believe we'd have been here today. And they owed $51 million. It was $31 million we were needing them to pay. Because that's what we spent in fuel, in hours, in replacement parts, in buying the parts, in customer refunds to customers, just that we acclimated over time. And that was an ongoing bill every week, every month, that was getting bigger as we were replacing these parts. But they didn't pay.
Okay. I think that's all the questions I have. Ms. Ava, do you have any questions?
I just have a couple of questions. Did you ever, this is an accounting question, so don't go beyond where you feel comfortable.
It might have to go that way. But.
Okay. But whoever feels comfortable answering, if you do, did you ever add a liability or get, I'm going to ask it in two parts. Did you ever add a liability to your balance sheet for the Generac issue? Like, was that ever something that was added to the balance sheet?
In terms of, like, a warranty liability, or?
I don't know how it would have been described, but.
We had it as revenue, because there was still.
We had it as an accounts receivable on the balance sheet, because we had invoiced them with every expectation of being paid.
So you added an asset for the anticipated refund rather than.
Right, but there were also, you know, if there.
And then the other side of that was a contra expense.
Okay, so you would have been
essentially it's us incurring expenses that were expected to be reimbursed.
Right. So you're thinking of this at that point as an expense item as opposed to a liability on a balance sheet basis.
It would be a receivable from Generac.
Okay.
And then the credit would be, we considered it a contra revenue. We had discussions with our auditors, BDO, or whether it should be revenue, and based on ASC 606, their guidance was that it should actually be in like a contra expense in the P&L as opposed to a revenue item. And that was essentially what the way we were, you know, the underlying activities were expenses to us, you know, us paying people to do a truck roll, buying parts, all these items were expenses. So we would essentially reverse those expenses when we would receive payment from Generac, and that would be go through contra expense for the P&L, we had it booked as a receivable, then would flip it to cash when they paid us some small amounts.
And so they did make some payments?
They did make some payments. I think the total cash we received was $4
million? $4
million. And then we received some like-kind product that they gave us, product that they didn't charge us for. But ultimately, it was... What we needed was cash, and they refused to pay the invoice.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, it is.
With the Generac issues disclosed to J.P. Morgan at the time the loan was made?
The loan was made with J.P. Morgan?
Well, tell me when the original loan with J.P. Morgan was made.
That was made end of November, right, end of 2021?
Right, correct.
Yeah.
At that time, did you disclose the Generac issues to J.P.
Morgan?
We didn't
know there was a Generac issue.
They assured us it was fixed with the firmware. That was the timeline.
Okay, so that was the time. So by November, you thought that...
We thought we were, yeah, we were growing. We thought things were fine. We're seeing we burn things, but they said the firmware's fixed were good. It wasn't until all of everything started failing in February, March, where the calls flooded in. Then we're investigating, like, because we're sales and installation company, like, what is happening here? This makes no sense. Took us about 4 or 5 weeks to figure it out. And in May is when we said, okay, we've got a problem. And that's when, you know, I believe we let them know or started talking to them in May about it.
Even a little bit earlier.
Because we were going public about it, like, here's the issue of what's going on. So we were telling all of our...
Yeah, I just remember the fires were...
But they assured us that was resolved.
And also more isolated.
Yeah, it wasn't a bunch of fires. It was two
tidal waves.
But it was a bunch of I wish I could have brought them today. I think I brought them last time. It was a bunch of snaps that were charred, like burnt.
Right.
And we were replacing them, but they told us the firmware stops them from catching on fire, and we're good. So we're replacing them thinking, okay, it's just normal service work, warranty work, we're okay. We think things are fine. We don't realize. I think they knew everything, but I don't think they realized how large this was until it was too late, like late 2021. That's my belief. And then they were just scrambling. That's the way it seems. And then we found out, and they're like, oh, and they're just trying to, like, okay. Because they were going to be a pipe investor of ours when we went public for $50 million. They agreed verbally, and they were sending us a letter of intent to invest $50 million in our company when we were going to do the SPAC and the deal with XL Fleet. And there were no issues with them ever complaining about us being a bad installer until we sued them.
Okay. Sorry, I'm going to move on from that. The fifth third was the credit before JP.
Yes, that's
good.
What caused you to decide to refinance at the time that you did?
We needed a larger facility, and we wanted to go to a first-tier bank because we were planning to become a public company. And so we invited J.P. Morgan, at our request, invited Fifth Third to participate as a syndicate bank. And Fifth Third ultimately chose not to do that, but we had a great relationship with them. Just too small a facility, and we outgrew them.
So what was the amount of the prior facility? I think $11 million, $12 million?
No, the term loan, I'm going from memory now, but
that's
the term
okay.
loan, I think, with Fifth Third was also $30 million originally. And the P-card...
It's $10 million.
It's $10 million still. We kept it at $10 million for both facilities. And then we had the revolver with Fifth Third was... I think like $15 million or something like that.
And then I think my understanding is that the credit line expanded. Was there something that you did immediately with the funds that were made available with the new facility? I mean, was there a capital improvement? Was there a project that...
No, we used it for working capital and to just continue to grow.
Okay,
parties in the room individually guarantee the Fifth Third facility?
No.
No.
Did you ever guarantee any credit facilities in the last, 4 years?
No.
We had American Express cards that were in our name before we went with J.P. Morgan and the P-cards, or did we do that with Fifth Third?
Fifth Third, we had P-cards.
Okay. So before we went with Fifth Third, company always had an American Express that Kevin and me personally guaranteed. And so we'd assign them to installers for gas or install. So that was always the way until we went with Fifth Third. And then so that was the only debt that we ever personally guaranteed.
So that was back in 2018, so that was not in the last 4 years.
Yeah.
And I think in 2016, I had personally guaranteed a vendor, but that went away pretty quick after we grew.
Okay.
Okay. Anyone in the courtroom that did not ask questions last time that needs to ask wants to ask any questions. Did you ask questions last time? Okay, please come up. And if you would, just remember that we're not asking questions about your specific solar systems or loans or anything like that. And if you would, just state your full name or state your name, and then you can ask your question.
My name is Casey White.
Can you pull the microphone now?
Okay.
Is it on? Better? Is the microphone on?
There's a green light at the bottom of the microphone. Is it on?
Yeah, there's a green light on.
Okay, okay. We'll turn you up.
Is that better now? Can y'all hear me?
All right.
Okay. Go ahead with your question.
Again, I'm Casey White. I live in Gates County, North Carolina, which is about 5 hours away, roughly, from here. This is my second trip here and my first time speaking. I have a few questions. My main, because I think a lot of my questions actually have been covered to this point. So at this point, I think...
If you would just ask your most important questions that you have, because we won't try to limit you to
sure.
a couple.
I guess the main one for me is, and it's not an individual basis, there are a lot of people that kind of have the same question. You were aware at this point long ago that there were issues, whether it was firmware, whether it was Generac reassuring you the problem was fixed, all of this, right? Regardless, you continued to sell these products. So my specific issue is not a Generac issue because I don't even have permission to operate. So this is not a Generac issue. This is an installation issue that I'm having. Just as a, I guess my main question is, are you able to continue selling when you actively knew what you were selling was faulty? And then when it was brought to your attention, excuse me, let me be correct, your wife's attention, that there were issues that were outside of Generac issues to be ignored, to be blocked. Why was that acceptable? So you open up a Pink Cares group. There was a Pink Cares group that was set up.
Okay, let's let him answer your question.
Yes.
Okay.
This is what I want an answer for. Why do you feel that it is necessary to come in and be requesting funds that were resources that were put into this for payroll and not accepting a salary and all of this? Why do you expect any of that back when there are people that you sold these faulty systems to, knowing that they were faulty, that live on less than 10% of what a salary is before your bonuses? So I guess that's my question.
Well, first of all, I'm sorry that you have an installation issue. And I'm sorry to all the customers that have installation issues. If we didn't have this Generac issue, I truly believe we'd have been able to fix your issue. We wouldn't have been eaten up by the other resources. I can't speak on being blocked or personal individual thing. I can say that I'm sorry and that if you're able to put a claim in and we're able to win the Generac case, I'm hopeful that there'll be funds to not only pay the creditors, but you as well as people that deserve to have their systems fixed and be reimbursed to make that right. As for the installation of the product, I was assured by the CEO, it's a publicly traded company, that their firmware fixed it. When, you know, a car dealership sells a Chevy and there's an issue and Chevy tells them it's fixed, the car dealership doesn't quit selling Chevys. They believe in them. And we believed in them. And one of my biggest regrets in life, Ms. Weiss, is trusting Generac and believing the CEO. I wish that we would have switched earlier. We didn't. And when it was transparent that they were hiding from things and lying from things and misleading everybody, we quit and we sued them and we switched. And we made it every effort personally, this executive team and every one of our employees fought hard for customers like you and all our customers to try to get them fixed. We just ran out of runway to get it done. And I'm sorry.
Mm. Okay.
And as far as the claims go, that's just part of the process. It's formality. We're advised by counsel that we're to list all of that. But, you know, expectations are... You know, they are what they are. We want to make sure customers are taken care of.
Well,
thank you.
I guess my statement to finish that off would be that I don't feel that it is proper.
Thank you. I understand. But appreciate
that
you coming.
They should receive any funds back until the clients that they knowingly
Thank you, ma'am.
Told this
Thank
to
you.
Or handled.
Thank you. Anyone else in the courtroom? All right. Online, Yelena Archian, if you could unmute and turn on your video, please.
Yes. Hello. Can you all hear me?
Yes, ma'am. If you would please announce your, I know your attorney, if you would announce your appearance and who you represent.
Yes, absolutely. Yelena Archian of Catton Newton Rosenman in Dallas, Texas. We represent Spirit Realty. I just had a few follow-up questions on the subject of the escrowed funds and the improvements to the property located at 919 North Main Street. My first question is really a clarifying one. I just want to make sure I heard correctly earlier. With respect to the $370,000 of escrowed funds, those funds were a holdback against the purchase price that Spirit Realty paid in the transaction, correct?
That's what I understand them to be, yes.
Okay, perfect. Then my next question is, after that transaction closed, do you know if Power Home Solar made any improvements to the property?
Yeah, there were some improvements, but I know that list was never completed. So I would imagine there's definitely there's some funds left.
Okay, and with respect to the improvements that were completed, those invoices associated with those improvements were submitted to the escrow agent for reimbursement?
I can't confirm that. That's something I'd have to get back to you on. I don't have that information.
Do you know who at the company handled the improvements to the property and who would have handled the reimbursement?
I don't know exactly who had that, but that's something I can get over to you.
Okay, that would be great. Do you know if there are any pending improvements to the property?
I don't.
Okay, and do you know if there are any pending invoices that haven't been reimbursed yet?
I don't know that either.
Okay. That's all I had. If you could please provide the contact information of the person who would have this information to Mr. Summerlin, that would be helpful. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll just go down the list next, and I apologize to those who do not get to answer questions, but we are going to cut it off at 1 o'clock. So we'll just go down the list as quickly as we can.
Peter Hayes, if you'll unmute, and you can ask your question. And you are still muted. If you can unmute, that would be great. There you go.
Okay. I have two questions. Actually, I have a statement and a question.
Question.
My question is, I'm not understanding the logic of in September, my understanding is that you knew, Jason, that your business was in trouble and you were going to close your doors. That was my understanding, what I heard you say. But yet, you gave us a settlement and release agreement. Now, this is not just me, though. There's many people. They were given out like candy. So we received that, and you had like a 30-day. You gave yourself a 30-day period to pay it, and we called continuously every other day to Daryl White, that attorney, and even spoke with Liz and was told, oh, don't worry.
Ms. Hayes, do you have a question that is not related to your specific situation?
It's not my specific. My question is, why are these agreements being disregarded? Because that's what happened, is they were disregarded. Not just mine, all of them.
Well, the reason, I'll answer the question. The reason the agreements are being disregarded is because of the bankruptcy filing.
But what I'm saying is that
they signed it knowing it will.
Are we taking into consideration for the customers that these were signed knowing this business was going to close their doors? Like, this was just to keep people quiet deal.
Yeah, this is just
Ms. Hayes, that I mean, that is an issue.
That's unnecessary and is.
That is an issue you can present in your claim should you choose to file one. Okay.
Okay, then here's my comment. I'll do that.
We don't need comments, Ms. Hayes. This is a question and answer session. You've asked your question. I thank you, and we're going to move
on. Okay,
all right, Tammy Carnes, if you have a question, you can unmute and ask it, but please be sure that it is a question.
It absolutely is a question. Thank you. My first question, and I have two of them, is that how do I find out if my particular project was clawed back by the financing company and that Pink was never actually paid for my project?
Ms. Carnes, we do not have information on any specific projects. As I've reiterated several times now, if you have specific questions about your loan, you need to talk to your lender or your attorney. If you have specific questions about your system, you need to contact a third-party vendor. We're not here to answer questions about your system and your loan. This is a time for general questions that will benefit the group as an entirety and not about specific systems.
Okay, my second question is much more general. And that would be, according to the timeline that Mr. Waller presented, they were aware that the first generation Generac snaps were a problem in 2021. Is that correct?
That's correct. The day after we found out they were a problem, they assured us they put firmware in to remedy the problem. They assured us multiple times that it was fixed.
Okay, bearing that in mind, if you knew that those were a problem, why were you continuing to sell products that you knew to be faulty up to and including summer of 2022?
So, Ms. Carnes, I again apologize for your experience and how that went down for you. My sincere apology for anything that you're experiencing. Hopefully you can put a claim in. But as for us selling the information or selling the products after we were assured from Generac it was fixed, we believed in what they were saying. So until we found out that it wasn't fixed and they had a new part is when we decided to take action. They lied to us, you know. So Generac is a publicly traded company. If you've got more questions, you can contact the CEO, Aaron Jagfeld, if you'd like.
Thank you, Ms. Carnes. Dwight Williams, if you'd like to unmute, you may do so now. And if you want to ask a question, please don't turn on your camera. You can raise your hand in the chat, raise your hand, and then we'll call on you in order. We've got an order here. Mr. Williams, go ahead whenever you're ready.
Yes. Again, my name is Dwight Williams. I'm in Missouri City, Texas, and I have three questions, and they're all bait related. When did Goodleaf know that the system was not viable based on your bankruptcy issues?
Can you repeat that, Mr. Williams? You said, when did Goodleaf know what?
When did Goodleaf know that your system was not viable based on your bankruptcy issues?
I guess I don't understand the question.
I don't think you can answer the question because you don't know what Goodleaf knows.
Yeah, I don't know what Goodleaf knows, so I don't know when they knew anything, sir. Sorry.
Okay. When did Goodleaf stop paying you?
Well, Goodleaf, we had a lot of clawbacks and cancels. They stopped paying us, probably a week before we closed?
Yeah, within about 7 days after we closed the doors.
Yeah.
Before.
Would that be mid or early September?
The early September.
Okay. When did you know you would not want to use Generac as a provider?
So the day that we filed the lawsuit, August 1st, we quit using them. We put it on our website. We agreed with them in principle to continue to service the customers out there and replace until they didn't pay us, and then we had to tell those customers to call Generac, which wasn't great, but that's what we had to do.
Thank you, Mr. Williams.
Okay, I understand.
Thank you.
Can I ask a follow-up to that question, please?
No, please. Sir. We're trying to get as many people as we can, and we've already allowed you 3 questions. Thank you.
Okay.
Mark Young, you're next on my list.
Yeah, hi, good morning. Mark Young, Galveston, Texas, attorney representing American National. We've got an outstanding lease. I just may get into the specific, but are there any leases that you intend to not reject? And really to the trustee, if we can get all the property's been cleared from our property at 5747 perimeter in Ohio. We just want to get a stipulation of rejection earlier than that filing date, if we might, so we can go ahead and let the property.
You're talking about real estate leases, Mr. Young?
Yeah, it's real property located in Ohio. And I can get offline, but I'm here, so I just wanted to ask if there was any. I'm going to get this ball rolling. Dublin, Ohio, 5747 Perimeter Drive, Dublin, Ohio.
Okay. Yeah, we're working on all those leases as quickly as we can. We don't, obviously, we're in liquidation mode, so we're not keeping any properties long term. If you'll contact me off of the 341 meeting, we can discuss your client's lease.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Shauna Brown, I hope I'm saying your name correctly. You're next on our list. Shawana Brown, I bet.
Shawana Brown, correct.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Error at first.
No, thank you. I appreciate it.
And if you're...
I just...
Ms. Brown,
go
if
ahead,
you could stand still, please.
Makes us busy.
I was moving from in the front. I'm at work. I apologize.
That's all right. Thank you.
My question was, I heard Jason mention about the Generac issues. I just wanted to know, what about... the customers prior, so families that had damages prior to anything being a Generac issue. We had installation issues, and I've heard that multiple times today. I feel like that those issues should have been a priority, especially knowing that some of those issues was life-threatening.
Well, Ms. Brown, I apologize about your installation. Let me ask you this. Were you installed before 2020?
We were installed in November of 2021 and never, ever got online.
Okay.
On grid.
But I'm assuming it's a personal issue and you have an installation issue. I'll answer it in general for this. First of all, I apologize for everything that you've experienced for all the customers out there, and I mean that. I hate that. I fought as hard as I could to do this. But, you know, the priorities come in based on calls, based on time. And, you know, if we have 200 customers that have installation issues that we need to get to, and we have 8,000 PVRS lockouts and 6,000 PV leak issues with Generac. So I'm just throwing numbers out there as percentage. We can't just stick everybody on to do an installation issue. You need certain crews for certain things. So it wasn't a matter of not prioritizing. It was a matter of the resources and having the ability to be able to do it one at a time. Maybe there were some people that had installation issues prior to that saw something going on. I'm never going to say we were perfect. I believe we were pretty close for a long time. That's why we had the A-plus rating, and that's why you chose us. But, you know, had we didn't have these resources that ate up everything and the calls, 5-hour hold times, we could have got to you earlier and got you fixed. And for that, I'm sorry. But it wasn't on purpose or prioritizing just to fix the Generac ones. We wanted to fix all of them equally. That just happened to be a vast majority of them because it ate up the resources. There were so many. So I'm sorry.
That's understandable. But as a company and as a consumer, I think that we should have been told that. We were told by Rachel Ritchie that we spoke with personally. We spoke to Brian. We spoke with a Bill or Bob, whatever the name was. I apologize if I'm... don't have the name correct, but we were told personally that it was going to be taken care of. And then we get a letter from Sedgwick with an offer in September. And then we get a phone call a couple of days later after signing that the company doors were closed.
Yeah, like I mentioned earlier, Ms. Brown, the first week of September, I still thought we were going to be okay. We were turning the corner. We had a better August than we did July, and we were on pace to have a better September. When the finance companies dried up the resources, we had layoffs. The media was out there with misinformation. A lot of these hate groups were getting people fired up, employees, ex-employees, and upset customers. That helped us close, that pushed to close the doors. I wish that wasn't the case, but that's what happened. And I'm sorry, and I would put a claim in, and let's ride this thing out, and Generac hopefully does what's right, and justice is served, and you guys are made whole. That's my hope.
All right.
Thank you, Ms. Brown.
Now we're going to have to move to the next question.
3-minute restroom break. I'm sorry.
All right. We've got 45 minutes. You can take a break. We're going to keep going.
Sorry.
I was about to say the same thing. Just let him go. I'm good.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Thank you.
We'll do a rotating basis. How about that?
Okay.
Well, it would be at least two of us.
I see a participant who's used the name Weenum. I'm not sure if that's just a username, but if that's you, you may unmute and ask your question. All right, going once, going twice. We're going to keep going. Harjinder, and I cannot see your full name because it cuts off. Hold on, there it is. Harjinder Shawan, I'm guessing that.
Yes, I just unmuted. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, we can. Thank you. And I apologize for, I'm sure I butchered your name. I apologize for that.
That's okay. It's Harjinder Shawan. So my first question is, how do I find out how many people, how many customers you have in Ohio? Can I get that information?
I suppose you can look at the court docket and see how many people live in Ohio, but I will tell you the court docket has about 34,000 entries in it, so you're going to spend some time searching it.
Secondly, so following up from that, my question is, how come when you knew you had such a big problem, you had 30,000 people that, you had 30,000 complaints a month, why weren't the customers informed that certain systems have default or faulty parts in there that you say belong to Generac? And I don't even know whether I have that or not, but the customer should have been informed so that they could know whether they should go ahead and take some action on that. So why weren't customers informed? I got a letter about the bankruptcy, but I didn't hear anything from Powerhouse Solar about this ongoing problem, which could be life-threatening. So it's a very serious thing, and I don't think you were thinking of your customers. You were trying to put Band-Aid on the problems that you were actually faced with. Right. Why weren't the customers...
Mr. Chihuahua, let's let Mr. Waller answer your question, please.
First of all, I hear your frustration, Mr. Chihuahua, and I apologize. And I assure you, when I say I fought, I am the hardest SOB to fight for you guys that you don't know. I was screaming and yelling at Generac, send these customers a letter. We're going to send them a letter. They kept saying, you can't send them anything. We'll sue you. We finally forced them to send a letter in June when we were finding things out the end of May. They sent a letter. They told us. We couldn't prove it, but we know multiple customers had it because they called in. They sent a letter mentioning they have an issue with the SNAP 801, and they have this new part out that's an 802. They assured us it was fixed. Had I known that it wasn't, sir, we wouldn't have sold their product. And that's why we filed a lawsuit on them. And I would encourage you to file a lawsuit on them and join the class action. And, like, do whatever you've got. They've got two class actions against them right now. I would find a way to join them. The question should be over in Wisconsin. And really, our good friend Aaron Yagtel should be answering why he lied to so many contractors and tens of thousands of customers about the part working. Because we were the middle person here, trying to do what was right for you guys. We weren't trying to stay open to put a Band-Aid on it. We peeled that Band-Aid off and exposed them in August and went a different direction, and sales started to grow. We saw a problem. We forced them to send a letter. They're the big, giant public company with all these resources. They could have fixed all of this, sir, with a national recall. If they would have done a national recall when this was a problem, none of us would be sitting here today.
But that didn't happen. They lied to me, they lied to my team, and they lied to you guys. And I'm sorry.
Okay, and we don't have to agree with what the answer was, but that is the answer coming from the company, and even if you don't like it, that's all we're going to have time for. So I'm going to keep going. We've got Tina Osterwich. Can you unmute and ask your question?
Yes, hi. My name is Tina Osterwich, and I am from St. Louis. I would just like to ask, is there money for claims? If you don't get a payment from Generac and we file a claim, is there money out there that will trickle down and pay said claims?
At the current time, we do not know the answer to that question. We are in the process of liquidating assets. At the current time, there is not money. Whether there will be money will depend in large part possibly on the Generac lawsuit itself.
Okay. Question number two, I believe you already answered it, but I just need to know, did I understand correctly that to date Generac does not have a fix for these snaps?
Ms. Osterwich, I can't speak to today. I can speak to when we closed, and they came out with a new part called an 802 that they told us was working. Now, they've told us a lot of things over time. I would, check, the other lawsuits out there against them, and I appreciate you being so kind in your questions and not aggressive. I understand your frustration, and I hope that there is something at the end of this for everybody.
Okay. Thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome.
All right. And Weenum, I see you on there. I'm not sure if I'm using the correct name, but you may ask your question now. You are still on mute, though. Or we can't hear you, actually. You may not have a microphone because you are unmuted, but we cannot hear you. Why don't you test a little bit on your system, and then we'll come back to you, okay? Our next question is Odaliz Baez.
Yes. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you. You can ask your question.
Okay. Yes. I'm not sure where I really go first. I'm Puerto Rican. I'm Hispanic. And I said I'm Hispanic here in Cleveland, Ohio. And we had the same question. They did our system, but they told us we were having batteries with it. And there's no batteries at all, and we're still paying for this loan.
Yes, ma'am. As we've mentioned several times, we cannot answer questions about your specific system. We do not have that information with us or available to us for this meeting.
And we also don't have any product or inventory to sell to customers either. So those are unavailable from this source. You might be able to find them somewhere else.
Okay, that's a good question. So we still, I know you say nothing about the loan in specific for person, but I don't even know what to ask if I've been calling different places. But we still going to be paying $30,000 on a loan that is not done, is partial done?
Yes, ma'am. You need to speak with your lender or your own attorney, or as far as your system yourself, you need to contact a third-party solar provider to help you out. That's all we can tell you.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kimber Starks, if you'd like to ask your question now.
Hi, good morning. I'm from Belleville, Illinois. And my question is, you stated that you have installation crews for each designated area. My crew was from Austin, Texas. Are you validating that each of your crews is legal to work in not only the state with licensing, but also in the United States? Were you checking those documents?
Ma'am, I don't have that information on me. I mean, it would have to go down to a regional director. But, we have a compliance team, legal team on staff. We're very compliant. We take licenses seriously. If we had a crew from out of state, I would assume, Steve, maybe they were training another crew.
I didn't hear
a
question.
We have
clearly
something about a crew from Texas and Illinois or something. I don't know.
We can't get a permit in a state where we're not properly licensed. So we don't do business in the state until those licenses are in place, and we have to have recorded with the Secretary of State. The whole compliance process, it's very detailed and very accurate. And if we didn't have all of those things in place, we wouldn't be able to get a permit from local government to install the system.
Does that apply to your subcontracted crews as well?
We don't use subcontractors.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Doug is the next person on my list. Can you unmute and ask your question now? All right, we're going to keep going. If you figure that out. Oh, no. Weenum, you want to try one more time? And Sam, we still don't have any audio, so I'm thinking it must be your microphone. I'm sorry about that. All right, Sergio Pereira.
Thank you. Good morning. Good afternoon. I got three questions really quick. The first one was the trustee said something about the customers to file a claim. They fall on a class. I'd like to know what class will be at far down the line.
Most customer claims are going to just be general unsecured creditors.
Okay, my next question is, can the trustee enforce Generac to come and solve the problems on the customers?
Not at the current moment, no. I don't think there's a mechanism to do that. That could be some negotiations in the pending lawsuit, but that's not on the table at the current time.
And is the trustee in control of the lawsuit that Power Home has against Generac?
Yes, it's property of the bankruptcy estate. We will be pursuing it, although it's been stayed at the time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Alexander Morse, I think is the name I see. Morshelzer. Sorry, y'all. I can't see everybody's name in full when they get long. Alexander Morshelzer. Okay, I'm going to keep going. Connie Wyman.
Oh, sorry, I got here.
Oh, you're here. Okay, great. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I thought I hit the mute button and it went back on. It's Alex, but yes, you got it right. I'll try to make this quick. There was a lot of discussion about the sales training and who everybody rolled up to. And I had a question about the expected offset of the systems in general and the training on what was, on average, what could be expected for a customer. I know that could vary per system, but what was the company looking for us to see as an offset to really make an impact on the environment with solar? And if it came down to it, were your engineers that were looking at these designs, if they saw that the system wasn't going to be beneficial to someone, were they trained to say something about it? Because there are a lot of people that are not educated in solar, and like you said, you trusted Generac. We trusted our salespeople. So I'm just curious if there was a benchmark that you worked under.
Alex, great question. And also, I apologize about your experience, and sorry we let you down, couldn't get to the promised land together. So a couple questions that you asked. Let me address the first thing. As for sales training, our sales training is amazing. Contrary to what people say out there, it's amazing. It's never had any issues. In fact, we had an AM100 investigation done in April of this year from Kramer Levin, which was a third-party independent study, and it came back with flying colors. Got the study here. It's also in a media packet I've shared with people, and the trustee and the team have it as well. It is amazing. We don't give controls to sales reps to manipulate systems. They can't change the offset. They can't change the direction of it. They can't change any of that stuff. So we feel very confident in that. And, you know, the history shows, our record shows, the rating of our business shows, and you believing in us shows that we've always done the right thing and have been a great company out there for these consumers. However, there is no fixed what is the offset, everyone? Everyone is different. You know, Steve might want to, you know, just have solar and have a 25% offset. Kevin might want to lower his bill as much as possible and have an 88% offset. Everybody's different. Every home is different. Every roof is different. The direction it faces is different. We use a company called Aurora Software. They're top-notch in the industry. That's who we use. In cases where systems worked, meaning no issues with the Generac firmware, any of that nonsense, we were actually under-promising and over-delivering in most cases. Meaning if it says it was doing this, we were getting thousands of studies and showing where we would do, you know, audits and analysts with customers where we were, customers were actually producing more than what was anticipated. And I know that sucks for all the people that are listening going, wow, that's not me, and the sales rep said that. I assure you, I don't know the exact percentages, but I'm going to throw out there probably 9 out of 10 anybody having issues with production or usage or performance, it's something to do with this Generac firmware for sure. And if they're the sales rep, you know, we have high turnover in sales because, you know, we want to make sure that the experience for consumers is perfect. And if there's anything said that they shouldn't, they're saying a tax credit or tax rebate and the way they're wording it or any of that nonsense. We do QA calls. The finance companies do QA calls. We go over everything. And so I truly believe that we've done a good job. You get a couple bad apples out there, we let them go if we ever see things like that. But they can't manipulate systems, usage, or production. Our training was top-notch. Our trainers were top-notch. Everything was about compliance. Everything was about the consumer. Everything was about the industry and the brand. And so
I'm going to interrupt you. I don't think you've asked the question. Was there training about when to not make the sale if the system wasn't going to produce a certain amount of offset?
At least
that part of the training.
Yeah, I believe it was at least 50%.
Okay.
At least 50%. But what I think Jason was really wanting to touch on is the mechanisms we had in place to ensure that the customers fitting into those boundaries.
Correct.
And that they cannot manipulate anything. It's important what you're saying and directly.
But you said it was 50%.
50%.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Alex, does that help with your question? Do you have a follow-up question?
More just a statement. I mean, I've had solar, and I'm a big proponent of solar. And like I said, we trusted the salesman because we had a good pitch. We had a 96% offset with our last system. And it was fantastic. I can't believe that somebody would only want 25% because now I have giant bills for 30%. So, if that was the approach, but I can't say that as a whole that that's what most solar consumers are looking for. But thank you for your answer.
Thank you.
Thank you. Weenum, can you try one more time?
Can you hear me now?
We can. Success.
Perfect. Okay. Thank you. I apologize for the technical difficulties. You spoke often about the email that you got directly from the CEO for Generac, who guaranteed that things would be taken care of. I don't know if you recall, but my husband and I are both disabled veterans. I'm getting to my question. And I actually have an email from you, Mr. Waller, saying that everything would be taken care of. So, you know, that is what it is, those emails of promises. My first question is, how much percentage were your customers were disabled veterans or people on disability?
I don't have that information, ma'am. I don't know.
Okay. Ballpark. Because I know you did target towards military because you
we gave a military discount, but I have no clue how many were disabled veterans. I don't know.
Okay. Then my second part question is, you were in a partnership with a company called AIS Solar when we did our relationship with you. How many other companies out there were involved in, you said that you didn't do subcontractors, so I don't understand that relationship. Was it an affiliate? Were they, I don't show the part.
Kevin, would you like to talk about the AIS relationship?
Yeah, AIS was a referral partner for us. So they had mutual customers, I believe. I don't know exactly what they did, but they had customers where they purchased their services from them, and then they would in turn refer them for solar. But that was one of, I believe, one. I can't think of another relationship like that out there. So I think I believe they're them to be the only ones.
And how many customers did you have with AIS that you were in partnership with?
You know, I don't have that answer, but if I were just to guess, less than 50.
You're just one of those lucky 50. Okay, well, thank you. Thank you so much for being understanding about my technical difficulties.
Thank you.
Wenham, I apologize for everything you guys are experiencing as well, and I hope that you get a claim in and things are made right.
All right. Connie Weimer is next on my list.
Hi. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right. So I have a general question, which is general in general, but it is specific to our situation. In the previous meeting, you guys said to call your insurance company to file a claim if we had property damage. And I did that. And they said that they weren't taking claims because of the bankruptcy. So I just wanted to know if you guys were aware of that and, you know, what our options are, I guess, with the insurance claim.
I don't have that information. I apologize. I don't know if, you know, how the homeowner's insurance works with a company and potential damage.
No.
I'm not sure. I'm sorry.
No. I called your insurance company because you guys told us what your insurance company's name was, and I called them.
Well, I believe our insurance company wouldn't do anything because we're bankrupt right now. So you might
want. Right. So why did you tell us to call, why did you tell us to get a hold of them in the last meeting?
I don't remember telling you to do anything. I remember somebody asking for an insurance name, and I believe we gave it to them. That was it. Didn't know what the reason was for. I would put a claim in, though, and hopefully everything works out with the Generac case is what we're praying for. And you can be made whole and get that fixed, and I apologize.
All right. Justin Burgess.
Good morning. My name is Justin, and I know Mr. Waller just said previously that they did not use subcontractors, but I do have proof. He may not have been aware that they did, but I do have proof through text messages that subcontractors, electricians, did come to my house. But my question is, in April, Power Home Solar changed its name to Pink Energy. If the sales were so good and everything was going great for the company, why was the name change for the company needed? And is there a accounting tracking of how funds were channeled from Power Home Solar to Pink Energy when that name change was made in April 2022?
Great question, ma'am. And again, I apologize for anything that you're experiencing. I can't comment on the subcontractors. That's news to me. So I apologize about that as well. As for Pink Energy, we actually elected almost a year before the name change, early in 2021, that we were going to change the name from Power Home Solar when we were looking to go public to Smart Power 360. It's a brand that we trademarked. It was part of our energy efficiency package. We wanted to be something bigger than Power, Home, and Solar. We were looking at microgrids. We were looking at community solar. We were looking at low-income housing opportunity to provide electrical grids there. And so that all came to fruition. And then in October of 2021, I said, I don't like Smart Power 360. And so I met with the team and said, we need to come up with another name. We were talking to XL Fleet, who was negotiating with us on behalf of MGG, told them we were talking about changing the name. We came up with Pink Energy. We had it scheduled to change in spring of 2022, and we did that. Had nothing to do with the customer service issues. We actually aired commercials for a week to let consumers know that, hey, we're changing from Power Home to Pink, and we're extending your warranty from 5 years to 10 years for workmanship. And we sent letters out to customers. So we did it. It wasn't changing the name or running from anything. It was proactively planned based on us going public. That's what sometimes when companies go public, they have a name change, right? Like First Union bought Wachovia, they decided to change to Wachovia. XL Fleet was going to take us public, and we said, hey, we don't want to be XL Fleet, we don't want to be Power Home, let's be Pink Energy.
And how about the finances? How was that handled?
It was the same company. It was a DBA. It's the same company. The finances and the accounting is the same.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next person I have is Lakima, if you can unmute and ask a question. And for the people who are listening only, if you're only on telephone, you can press *5 to raise your hand, and that will let me know that you have a question. But we are doing low on time.
Okay. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Lakima, and I'm calling out of Asheboro, North Carolina. My question to Jason and his team, you guys said you found out that there was a problem with the Generac SNAP in 2021, but you still continue to sell systems. Wouldn't it be a priority to fix the customers that are having a problem versus selling newer systems?
Yes, ma'am. So in August of 2021, when we found out there was an issue, within a day, I think it's exactly 2 days, they assured us that the firmware was a permanent fix and there were no worries. And we weren't seeing the issues, and neither were you, because it was a fix for the fire, but it wasn't a fix that it turned off the systems. And we didn't find out until several months later when your guys' systems weren't performing or producing, and then it became an issue. When we realized that was an issue, they came out with a new part and told us that that was always a temporary fix, and that's when we were having a lot of issues with Generac and threatening to leave and getting new product and making them, overnight ship things from Vietnam with the 802s to get these replaced. So we were very diligent in making yours and anybody else's issue urgent. We do care. We're the ones that, forced them to send a letter to everybody and tried to do everything we could and fight for our consumers out there to make sure that they were protected. So it wasn't malicious or us growing. In fact, the opposite happened. Our business started servicing more than we were installing, and that ended up being our demise.
Okay. My second question is, as far as you guys' sales team, I know my salesperson told me that the tax, I'm not sure if you can answer this, but we were supposed to get like a tax credit, like a 26% back, and I've had the solar system since 2020 and have gotten nothing back on that.
That's hard to answer. I think I would just recommend getting with your tax professional and seeing if the forms were filled out right.
Yeah, it states multiple times, I think, in the agreement that we're not tax professionals. It's in our pitch. It's, in the materials. It's a tax credit if you can get it. Doesn't mean you can get it. We don't know people's income or if they pay taxes or if they don't, but it is a opportunity out there if you get solar that you can apply to get that. And I think that they just increased it from 26 to 30 and extended the years. But I would get with your CPA and see what you could do there.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
That's all.
Thank you. Robert Cooper?
Yes, thank you. I am just curious, at what point did you begin receiving the 802s, and when did they start being installed?
Hold on. Started getting some drivel in the middle of May and got a reasonable number starting in June.
Yeah, I just listened to a recorded phone call the other day. Kevin Clink and myself, I sent the team, said, wow, I can't believe we have this call still. But it's where in May where we're screaming at the timber tops to Generac saying, you need to overnight these. We need how many? It was like 80,000 a week or something crazy. And he's like, I can only get you 20,000. So we actually had to continue to call some of you guys probably on here and say, unfortunately, we can't put you in tomorrow. We don't have the parts yet. So that kept delaying as they were delaying getting us those parts. And that's when we told them that, we need those pieces. We can't install any new jobs. And that's when we stopped everything going forward when the 802 came out. For us, installing was the 802s, but we needed the inventory to do that. And that's why we had to put a lot of these service calls and installs off.
All right. Thank you. The next person on my list is Chelsea Price.
Hello. Actually, I have the question for my wife. It's our system as well. It's more of with the Snap RSs and the firmware. It's a two-parted question. A, do you guys ever feel like the systems were underperforming? And then, do you feel that firmware could be manipulated now to where it shows that systems are performing?
So that's a great question you ask, sir. In the dying hours of our existence as Power Home, I brought my wife in to help white glove service a lot of consumers and try to help them understand that we want to get them to the finish line and get them fixed and, you know, and explain to them what's going on. And I don't remember who brought it up to her. The team may have it, legal team or whoever, but somebody said that they were overperforming what we offered. There was a consumer that was producing more, and then they had snap issues. They were producing a heck of a lot less, and we couldn't come out. We came out and replaced the parts with the 802, and they weren't performing what they were with the 801, so they felt like there was a
governor.
We talked about internally, a governor to reduce it, and then that consumer called Generac, raised hell, sent an email, and all of a sudden they were overproducing what they were back with the 801s. So I am not a scientist, technical person like that. That's not my – but listen, that theory is out there. I don't know how that happened for that consumer, and that person kept sending us proof. Sounds like you might have some information like that too. So, you know, I can't speak.
I monitor it every day, and I know what it was doing, what it – the issues I've had. We've had all the way from the 801s to the whatever. So, and I monitor it every single day. I wake up and, you know.
And what's then, your feedback? Did you?
If it's at 7.5 kilowatt hours, and then on the same day, the next year, the same temperature, it could only be making 5.5.
So what is your?
It's like you were saying with the governing. So it's just that.
Yes, sir. If you think there's an issue with Generac manipulating your system, you should probably contact your attorney or your state attorney general.
Also, right. to reach out to the two class action cases, that they'd probably love to hear from you, Mr. Price.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's all in the data. Because I can unplug it, I can do whatever, everything, and it'll still read that baseline thing like nothing's ever done.
We saw the same data. We were seeing the same thing you're saying, and there is something there. I would definitely reach out, but there's I would agree there's something there.
Thank you.
Yeah. We're getting really close.
Thank you.
Time, so we're going to keep going.
Thank you, Mr. Thank Price. You. Yep.
James Sexton.
So you mentioned the Aurora software you're using. Did you ever use a software prior to that?
We did. A company called Solo.
And when did you change that?
Migrated in
April of 2021.
Yeah.
And why did you change to the Aurora?
Because we were not happy with the service or the quality of the Solo platform. At the time, for a long time, Solo was, you know, basically
subcontracting
the main, you know, main folks that people used, and the Aurora came along and they were so much more accurate. And we worked for several months to put together, to build with them a unique system for Power Home that wasn't available to anybody else at the time, that had even more controls on it and that sort of thing. And it took us almost a year to get that done.
What was the sun thing called, Kevin? Because that was the biggest sales point.
LiDAR?
LiDAR. We were able to see the LiDAR on it, sir, to see the difference, to show the consumers on how solar works in different times of the day. So they were much more technology advanced. And it turns out, in any shading situation, Solo was subcontracting Aurora, so we were paying for it anyways. So we just went to them and had them customize and build one. We started working with them in 2020. But we launched our version of it in 2021.
And Mr. Sexton, I had to mute you because I was getting a lot of feedback, so you can unmute if you have a short follow-up question.
Yes, so the issue with the Solo was it was showing that the output or the offset was greater than what it was. This is what I've heard from multiple other people. Including myself, but hundreds of people have told me the same thing. Your wife and Nate also confirmed in emails to me that was exactly what happened. And then you switched to the Aurora to change that offset. You were supposed to add 15 panels to my home to supposedly do that. Of course, that did not happen being in your current bankruptcy state. So there are issues other than Generac that were in this situation, or you wouldn't have made that change. Is that correct?
Well, we didn't make the change because of your situation or any situation like that.
No, there are multiple.
I'll answer the question for you. So First of all, I apologize. I hate that this happened for you. And hope, I wish there's a way we can get you those panels. But with Solo, their shading, they were having a subcontract. Any shading issues, they had a subcontract with Aurora. We were paying for that anyways. Solo was not as active.
Correct. So that was your main reason because of the accuracy of the output, correct?
Yeah. Let me talk. I can answer the question if you let me talk. Okay.
Sure.
So, again, we switched because they were subcontracting using Aurora anyways for the shading. They were already using them, and we didn't like that the linear was there. There were a small number of cases where the Aurora, where the Solo software didn't acclimate the correct shading. It was a very small number of cases. Yours obviously was one of them. That's where we would give panels and make it right by customers after we did an Aurora analysis. And that's what also helped us transition to Aurora.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Doug, I called on you earlier and I didn't get a response. You're back at the top of the list.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I sure can. Thank you.
I got two questions in here. The first one, it shows in the Power Home Solar contract that building permits were required to be gotten before installation happened. I've been communicated with my county clerk's office, and they state that you never did get building permits for the install of mine. Is there a reason behind that?
Doug, I don't think we can answer personal on yours, but I can tell you in certain jurisdictions you need electrical permits. In certain jurisdictions you need builder permits. That's why both are in the contract. And in certain you don't even need either, but we mentioned both, or you need both. We mentioned that one, both, or neither in the agreement because of that reason. So whatever's needed to do the installation, we would have been following those jurisdictions.
I guess that was what my statement was, is that my county clerk said that he was required to have a building permit to install, and they state that you never did get one.
Yeah.
We can't answer questions specific to your system, Doug. I apologize.
All right.
Okay. My second question was about cancellations. You stated that today that you gave a 7-day cancellation period. And on my contract, it said 3, and I tried to cancel, and it was outside the window. Is it customary for you to threaten your customers to lawsuit if they don't have it installed anyhow?
Well, I don't know. When did you sign your contract, sir?
The December 2nd, 2020.
Okay. I know in 2021, we went to a 7-day from a 3. I don't handle the cancellation retention departments. I know that if we are far along in your project, meaning permits or structural letters or design or any of that stuff, that you are subjected in the agreement for fees, but I've never heard of anybody threatening or anything like that. So my apologies if that's what, you know, you experienced, but that's not what we operate as or have done in the past.
And that's how it was handled with me personally, that they threatened me a month later that they was going to sue me because I told them I didn't want it installed in my home, and I got threatened. So I was...
Doug, we can't address your specific situation, as I've reiterated several times. We'll move on to the next question.
We just got about 5 more minutes. Joe Baluha, you're next on my list.
So... there's been a lot of talk about Generac out here. My question is, I'm SolarEdge, installed 2018. I've been attorneyed up since 2018, and I still don't have a working system till this day. Matter of fact, my system is a lockout tagout because the wires on the side of the house have melted, even though you guys have tried putting in 5 different SolarEdge units without realizing it was wired incorrectly. So where do I stand in this? As I'm not part of Generac, but don't have a working system.
Joe, you would be in the same situation as every other customer. It's irregardless of which type of system you have. All the customers are simply customers at this point.
And if there is a recovery from Generac, those funds, any funds recovered and available for distribution to creditors would be included, and all customers would be included in that distribution if they have an allowed claim against the estate.
I hope that makes sense, Joe. What they're saying is whether you're SolarEdge or whether you're Generac, if you're a customer, you could put a claim in, right, because you're a customer of the zoo.
It makes sense. Just been dealing with it since 2018, and I've gotten nowhere with you guys.
Oh, my apologies.
All right, we're going to have to keep going because it's getting late. Rebecca Zong, you're my next person. Rebecca? All right, my next person, I'm going to keep going, and Rebecca, we can come back to you if we need to. There's a phone number. Oh, here you are, Rebecca. Thank you. Go ahead. We can see you.
Hi. Can you hear me now?
Yes, ma'am.
Hello?
Yes,
we can hear you.
Okay. So my question is, the last time we were in court, you had stated about the M1 distribution and the permission to operate distribution as well from the loan companies. And you had said that you did not get your full distribution from the loan companies until permission to operate was granted, correct?
No, when installation's complete, permission to operate is a service that we offer that we don't get paid for that. Now, they will claw back. Certain finance companies would claw that back if they didn't get permission to operate in 6 months or so after. But permission to operate is out of our control. Like, once we do the installation, we're done. That goes to the utility company and the consumer. As a service, we manage that process with the consumer to help get them to that part. But we don't get paid. Our payment is done at installation, not a PTO. And I want to. Yeah, I know that it's frustrating because there's so many buckets. This is like an assembly line. So it sounds like you were installed, but you weren't PTO'd, and it's probably in haywire. And that's what I'm assuming is where you're at. There are customers from point of sale to waiting for permit to design and all of that. And I apologize, but that when we closed, everyone in that assembly line got stuck in their spot.
Okay, and I have a phone number for 217-254-4451. If that is you, I think I know how do you unmute? Let's see. You can press star 6 to unmute yourself and ask your question.
Sorry.
You can go. I think we can hear you. If you will go ahead.
Okay. My name is James Jenkins. Live in Mattoon, Illinois. My question is: how can Power Home? I know a lot of people have had this problem. They were paid, but the systems were never completed. I don't understand how that's not criminal.
Sir, I don't know your personal situation. I know that, you know, the finance company, they do a QA call with the consumer, and, you know, completion could be the panels on there and active. We're not, you know, if we're still waiting for an inspection or the PTO, that's a service above completion. But every situation is different. On the consumers and their jurisdiction of where their system is actually activated. So I'm not sure how to answer your question on that. I don't have details of...
I was talking about passing inspections, but my other question is, I was told that all these parts are USA made, and Mr. Waller stated something about a different company making a different place, make a different country making the snaps.
Yeah,
so therefore it was a lie.
Well, I don't lie, sir, and I'm sorry that you're upset. We use USA-made panels, but Generac's not made in the USA, and that's who our inverter is and optimizers and batteries, and that's what I was mentioning in Vietnam. But the panels we use, which were Hanwha Q-Seller made in Georgia and Silfab made in Washington State.
Okay, we're going to have to keep going.
Last one.
Bob Smith. Okay. I think that might be a sign we should stop because it's right at 1 o'clock.
No, can you hear me?
We can now. You just made it.
Oh, okay, all right. Sorry about that.
This is a general question. I'll try to say keep it general. How did Power Home or Pink Energy come to the conclusion to charge customers what they did for systems when you can go on the Internet and look up the price of the parts and get other quotes from other companies, and Power Home and Pink Energy prices are about double what other companies are? How did they come to that kind of realization that they would think it would be good practice to charge customers that kind of price?
Great question. I would say I don't know what you're pulling up online, but a lot of the do-it-yourself solar is just panels and materials. We have to do our design, which is done internally, structural letter, permit, HOA. We have to manage your interconnection process. We have to manage. We have to buy all the conduit. We have to buy the racking. We have to buy the material. We have to secure the panels. We have to make sure we then get a final design in for the ICR and the interconnection, and then we have to use our employees to come out and install it. And the biggest part is we have our energy efficiency package in there, which comes in and, you know, does the blown insulation, the LED lights, the Nest thermostat. So that's included in it, as well as we are doing financing. When you buy it online, you can't finance a system for 25 years. We're paying these finance companies fees in order for customers to be able to finance the solar. So that would be my answer to you of why the cost is there. We felt, you know, we've been in cases with competitors where we beat their price before, but, you know, we offered a better product in a lot of cases, at least we thought. I mean, we were wrong on the Generac thing, but that's why we were priced where we were at.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for doing this as efficiently as possible. We appreciate your participation, and I'm sorry we didn't get to everyone. Any closing announcements? Are you going to conclude the meeting?
I will. I will conclude the meeting today. As I stated in the beginning, the notice to file claims should be coming out hopefully within the next week. Obviously, it will take some time to get to everyone because there are a lot of people to receive the mailing, but that notice will be coming out. And as I stated before, if you're having issues with your solar panels, you should contact a solar company in your area. And that will conclude the 341 meeting for Power Home Solar, LLC, at 1:02 p.m. Thank you.